the clerk. The pot's 11 million, so I called in sick to work. I bought a pack of camels, a burrito, and a park. Crossed against the light, made a beeline for the park. The sky began to thunder.
Listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A two-month-long strike by oil workers in Norway, the world's third-largest oil exporter, has been answered with a lockout. The Norwegian Shipowners Association announced the lockout on Thursday of last week. And it involves three drilling rigs, one production ship, and eight drilling stations. About 200 members of the Norwegian Federation of Oil Workers Union have been on strike in a labor dispute seeking job security with the Norwegian State Oil Company. Work stoppage caused by the lockout will result in 700 workers laid off and about 30,000 barrels a day lost. The Norwegian government has the power to end the dispute at any time, but has said it is not yet ready to intervene.
During his presidential nomination speech, George Bush briefly outlined his plans to create jobs and improve America's struggling economy. He proposed additional funding for job training programs and making his tax cuts permanent. Secretary of Labor Elaine Chao attended the Republican National Convention.
Well, union membership is declining. Organized labor now comprise about 12.8% of the workforce. Union members comprise only 8.2% of the private sector workforce. So the labor movement has a number of issues that they need to be concerned about.
Chao is part of an administration that opposes the Employee Free Choice Act, which would eliminate many of the barriers to union organizing. She also supported recent cuts to overtime protections and favors allowing states to opt out of any federal minimum wage increase.
360 workers locked out of a titanium plant in Niles, Ohio for more than 10 months have rejected another contract proposal. Workers at the plant, represented by the United Steelworkers of America, were originally locked out when they rejected a proposal by BMI Titanium in October of 2003. At a meeting explaining the vote held in late August, union members said they could not accept the current proposal because it did not afford basic protections the workers need to provide for their families. The five-year contract provided no raises for the workers for the first 3 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Progressive Government Institute, Elaine Chao is the most conservative Secretary of Labor of the last half century. Ms. Chao has gone on record against the UN, overtime pay, and ergonomic regulations. She also canceled OSHA health and safety training grants to 19 nonprofit organizations and halted the publication of monthly mass layoff reports. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My husband went to school part-time. He's got a bachelor's degree in computer science. So far, no job. And it's been 3.5 years. The computer science industry was downsizing, sending jobs overseas. George Bush said Americans need to retrain. My God, how many times do we have to retrain? Why not bring these jobs back home? I voted for George Bush. I feel very betrayed.
MoveOnPack is responsible for the content of this advertisement. It's always a hoot to hear corporate lobbyists wailing to the high heavens about the scourge of frivolous lawsuits, demanding that Congress bar people from suing them. But guess who files the biggest number of frivolous lawsuits in America? Corporations. They sue their competitors, consumers, shareholders, critics, the media, public interest groups. They'll sue their own mama just to squeeze out another dime. For an example of litigious corporate absurdity, come to Lavernia, Texas, and hoist a cool one with the good folks who are regulars at the True Blue Texas Roadhouse. Located 25 miles east of San Antonio, this rural bar serves up beer, chips, country music, and genuine Texas atmosphere. It's in a corrugated metal building that used to be a garage. It's the real deal. But the True Blue Texas Roadhouse has been sued by the corporate lawyers of a national restaurant chain calling itself Texas Roadhouse. This outfit, which operates 165 restaurants in 30 states, wrote to Doug Bodie in Lavernia, claiming that Bodie's Texas True Blue Texas Roadhouse was violating the chain's trademark name and, get this, deceiving the consuming public into thinking this little bar in Lavernia is part of the chain. Now, get this. The chain has no Texas roots whatsoever. It began in Indiana and is headquartered in Kentucky. It dresses up its bars with Texas memorabilia, but it's a fake, profiting on the good name and spirit of genuine Texas roadhouses. Texas is where we live, says one of Bodie's regulars, which is way more than the plastic chain can claim. Bodie himself says, I'm just trying to make a living. For God's sake, I'm a Texas bar. Why can't I use that name? This is Jim Hightower saying, well, why can't he? If you'd like to tell the national chain where to go and tell it to leave Lavernia's genuine roadhouse alone, call the CEO, 502-426-9984.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first six payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on Tuesday, the 7th of September, 2004, coast to coast, border to border, on terrestrial radio stations, literally from coast to coast, and beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, up on cable radio network, archives at White Rose Society. If you'd like to call in, our number today, 1-866-889-8894. The website, tomhartman.com, which not only gets you archives of this, that, and the other thing, but also access to our chat room, which is already, in fact, geez, somehow, Klana, how did you get in there three times? It's remarkable. Technology is incredible. Today, it has been one of those. Louise was saying, are you sure Mercury's not still retrograde? It was like one of those days when computers have been doing funky things all day, all over this building. But we're here, we're on the air, you're there. Thank you so much for listening. Isn't it a miracle when you think about it? All the hundreds of thousands of coincidences that have brought us together in this moment. And that, you know, go back over time. You know, if it's just remarkable. And here we are. And speaking of coincidences, isn't it an extraordinary coincidence
that Osama bin Laden was not once mentioned. Not once mentioned. Not once mentioned by George W. Bush. Well, turns out Osama apparently is rather upset about this, as reported by Andy Borowitz of BorowitzReport.com. Osama bin Laden has fired his publicist. Al-Qaeda kingpin Osama bin Laden reportedly furious that his name was not mentioned once at last week's Republican National Convention, fired his publicist today and warned that more changes in the Al-Qaeda publicity department may be imminent. According to sources close to Mr. bin Laden, the Qaeda kingpin had eagerly anticipated watching the Republican gathering in its entirety, hoping to hear his name bitterly invoked dozens of times by GOP speakers. After all, they were in New York, you know, where he had his big success, as it were. But after hearing four nights' worth of speakers excoriating Democratic nominee John Kerry instead of him, an increasingly riled bin Laden picked up the phone and fired his publicist, David Grenway of the Grenway Group, a leading New York public relations firm. Mr. Grenway said, he said he was firing me and hiring whoever does publicity for Kerry. But according to Mr. Grenway, whose other clients include North Korean President Kim Jong-il and boxer Mike Tyson, the GOP's snub of Mr. bin Laden was largely his own fault. Mr. Grenway noted, "It's hard to drum up publicity for a client who won't do photo shoots. I had the cover of Teen People for him, but we lost it when he wouldn't come out of his cave." Mr. Grenway said he had no regrets about losing Mr. bin Laden as a client, adding, "He may be the world's most wanted man, but not by me." Elsewhere, the security team responsible for the Republican National Convention was still trying to determine how a lunatic slipped into Madison Square Garden and delivered the keynote address. It's a time-delayed joke there. It'll take you just a moment. Anyway, that from Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com, our hot news for the day. Just as a moment in time acknowledged, today is... acknowledgement. Today is September 7th, is National ADHD Awareness Day. No, it, really true. Senate Resolution 370, introduced by Maria Cantwell of Washington and Richard Durbin of Illinois, two senators, caused the U.S. Senate to officially recognize Attention Deficit Hyperactive Disorder, ADHD, as real, and devote this day to cognizance of it, to awareness of it. As speaking as somebody who's written seven or maybe eight books I can't keep track, right, because of my ADD, on the topic of ADHD, my most recent one titled The Edison Gene just came out about 6 months ago, and in which I lay out a fair body of recent scientific evidence indicating that ADHD actually... while it has its downsides, if you have ADD and you're trying to make a living as a bookkeeper, you're in deep trouble. But that it has significant upsides, and in fact, maybe even responsible for modern civilization as we know it. So, anyhow, I just toss that out there. If you have any thoughts about or a curiosity about ADHD, I'm not going to do a show on it. It's not all that political, other than the consequences of it, which we're going to get to in just a second. But if you have any thoughts on or questions on it, you know, give us a shout. 1-866-889-8894. Now, speaking of attention deficit disorder, one of the things that is very commonly associated with ADHD, and not just ADHD, of course, but the people with ADHD are at a slightly higher risk than everybody else in the population for having, is drug and alcohol abuse. And, you know, it's an unfortunate reality. ADD is not a bed of roses. And so, you know, you've got somebody who's impulsive, you know, who makes quick decisions, who... and whose neurochemistry is wired in such a way that they need periodic jolts of adrenaline, of energy. And it makes them more vulnerable to drug and alcohol abuse. And here we see now this guy who had a very difficult time in school, which is not uncommon in the profile of ADHD, seems to be kind of distractible and impulsive. had some of the ADD problems. You know, as I said, there's a light side and a dark side to this, and he seems to have really been a reflection of the dark side of it. Problems with peers, with friends, with his family. One time challenged his father to a fist fight. Of course, you know I'm speaking of George W. Bush. Kitty Kelly has a new book coming out. I mentioned it briefly yesterday that in her book, The Family, The Real Story of the Bush Dynasty, she will be revealing the story of the Bush, George W. Bush's girlfriend, who back before Roe v. Wade, before 1973, he got pregnant, and he paid for her abortion, and the two friends of hers who drove her to the abortionist, the illegal abortionist, have signed affidavits and testified, and that will be in Kitty Kelly's book. Well, it's like these stories are coming out one a day, right? Here's the one from today. This, and oddly, they're not appearing in the American press. This in the Mirror, the United Kingdom, the British paper, the Mirror. You know, it's a daily, national daily newspaper. Major daily national newspaper. George W. Bush snorted cocaine at Camp David, writes Emma Pryor in the Mirror. His wife, Laura, also allegedly tried cannabis, also known as pot or marijuana, in her youth. The book, The Real Story of the Bush Dynasty, The Family, The Real Story of the Bush Dynasty, Kitty Kelly's new book, asserts that George W. Bush first used coke, as in cocaine, when he was at college in the mid-1960s. It quotes his former sister-in-law, Sharon Bush, saying, Bush did, and I'm quoting now, George W. Bush's sister-in-law, quote, George W. Bush did coke at Camp David when his father was president, and not just once either. Other acquaintances allege that as a 26-year-old National Guard member, Bush, quote, liked to sneak out back for a joint or into the bathroom for a line of cocaine. Now, these issues were raised some time ago. You'll recall Mr. Hatfield wrote a book called Privileged Son, in which he claims to have interviewed several police officers who were involved in the actual arrest of George W. Bush for a cocaine violation back when he was in Texas, when he was a youngster, over 18, but, you know, in any case, and that he did 30 days of community service for that, which in his biography he talks about this 30 days that he did where he worked in an inner city a shelter of some sort. I forget the details of what kind of program it was, but it was one of these, you know, help the poor programs in the inner city in Houston or Dallas. And Mr. Hatfield says that the reason for that was the plea bargain. You know, do community service and you won't be convicted. But that the arrest was on his record, and that when Bush became governor, somehow all of his records so completely vanished that he had to have a new driver's license issued because all of his records of his all of his driving records vanished as well. I mean, it's as if he had simply been erased from all the computers of the state of Texas. Well, in fact, was. So this question got raised in 1999 during the campaign, and you know, he's essentially admitted to being an alcoholic. But when asked if he did drugs, in a direct question from a reporter, have you taken illegal drugs? He said, and I quote, I've told the American people that years ago I made some mistakes. I've learned from my mistakes, and should I be fortunate enough to become president, I will bring dignity and honor to the office, end quote. Later, an aide, clarifying his remarks, said Bush had not taken illegal drugs in the past 25 years. Kelly says that the Bush family covered up scandals because of their wealth and influence. Former student Torbury George says in the book, poor Georgie, he couldn't relate to women unless he was loaded. Another one of his classmates says he went out of his way to act crude. It's amazing how someone you held in such low esteem later became president. So I'm fascinated to find out, when is this book going to be released? And, you know, is it going to be released, like, in the last week of October? And I'm sure there's a lot of Republicans who are asking that same question, thinking that it's some kind of left-wing conspiracy theory. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Roy in Rio. Whoa, he's gone. We had Roy in Rio Rancho there, but he appears to have given up. Bush is, sorry about that, Roy, keeping you on hold there for quite some time. Sometimes you got to just get finished through these rants here. Speaking also of ADHD and George W. Bush, documents, this from the Associated Press, documents that should have been written to explain gaps in President Bush's Texas Air National Guard service are missing from the military records released about his service in 72 and 73. The missing documents fall into five broad categories, according to the Associated Press. The first category are the reports from the Texas Air National Guard to Bush's local draft board certifying that he remained in good standing. Those have vanished. These are called DOD Form 44s. Should have been filed in 71, 72, and 73. No, they vanished. Records of a required investigation into why he lost flight status, even though he apparently was not soloing. Why could he no longer fly? Because he skipped his 72 physical. This should have required some paperwork. Number three, a written acknowledgement that he'd received the orders grounding him. Number four, he was supposed to receive formal counseling after he missed three training sessions. Never did. No documents on that. And number five, a signed statement acknowledging that he could be called up to active duty because of all this. That's vanished, too. 20 after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Due to the rising rate of overweight Americans, more hospitals are being forced to spend money on patient lift systems and specialized hospital beds and wheelchairs. The U.S. Center of Disease Control reports that 65% of American adults are overweight and 31% are obese. Sizewise Rentals, whom specializes in medical equipment for the obese, has reported its business growing 15 to 20% each year.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you on National ADD Awareness Day.
That's all folks know.
Actually, it's just the beginning, folks. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Interesting story in the Wall Street Journal today about what's happening in Latin America as a consequence of conservative economics. I'm going to share some of that with you in a few moments. First, let's go to the phone lines. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ed in New Mexico on the line. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you, Ed?
I'm doing great also.
What's
up? On over the weekend, I was watching one of these television shows with a representative from the Republicans, and he was saying that we're going to have some debates about the nature of the debates between Bush and Kerry.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, why don't they just come clean, go mano a mano on with Kerry?
why don't we go back to having real debates? Actually, if these debates are anything like the Bush Gore debates, they're they don't really qualify as debates. They're like Q&A sessions that are very, very tightly scripted and highly circumscribed. And the Bush administration, the Bush campaign is playing for time. First of all, they want to have as few as possible. They know they have to have debates. They're concerned if they're ahead in the polls, they're going to try and have none, which of course they won't get away with. So they'll probably end up with one or two. If they're behind in the polls, then they're going to try and have more, maybe. But the bottom line for them, most important, is to try and control the format of the debates so that it's the kind of format in which George W. can do well and it's which
right.
You can't blame them for that. I mean, that's just that's both sides, I'm sure, are trying to do the same thing. But the Kerry campaign, because the Kerry campaign so much is turning on the issues. I mean, when you go through the issues here in the election that's coming up, do people care about health care? Do they care about jobs? Do they care about our trade policy? Do they care about the debts and deficits? Are they actually willing to pay the same taxes they paid under the Clinton administration to have the Clinton economy, for example? You go right down the list on the issues, and by and large, with the exception of a few of the wedge issues, the vast majority of Americans are absolutely on Kerry's side. And even on the wedge issues, you have this 50-50 split. Should abortion be legal, or should women who get abortions be subject to death by fire squad? Should prayer be mandatory in school? Should it be illegal to burn flags? Those kind of the basic wedge issues that the Republicans love to bring out. Even on those, there's a clear split in America. But Kerry is winning on the issues. Bush has been essentially trying to do a Schwarzenegger thing. Look at me, I'm an action figure hero kind of thing. And to the extent that the debates can be constructed in a way that allow Bush to do a lot of one-liners and strut and stuff like that, it will help him because he's running on personality or on perceived personality. And to the extent that the debates are constructed in a way that they actually have to discuss the issues with follow-up questions and follow-ups to the follow-ups, it's going to hurt Bush and help Kerry. And so that's the fight that's going on between these two camps.
Right. I got it.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, thanks, Tom.
Thanks for the call, Ed. Good to hear from you. And you know, hopefully we'll know soon. And, you know, whether or not Mr. Nader will be invited to participate, I'd say that's a virtual negative certainty, a virtual certainty that he will not. Nor will the Libertarian candidate be invited to participate, nor will the American Socialist Party or the remnants of the Nazi Party, what do they call that these days? I forget. Nor will the Ross Perot's party? Anyhow, nor will they be allowed to participate. I think it's just going to be Bush and Kerry. Life in the big city, hey? Would that we had proportional representation or instant runoff voting, or both, like in Australia, where for the upper house, for the Senate, they actually have proportional representation. For the lower house, the House of Representatives, they have instant runoff voting. Yeah, seems like such a great idea. Then you could have 4 or 5 candidates in a debate. It would be really genuinely interesting. 29 minutes past the hour.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. On Wednesday, one Labor Day event overshadowed all others in the media when Stephen Cassidy, president of the Uniformed Firefighters Association, Local 94, surprised organized labor by endorsing George W. Bush for re-election. The International Association of Firefighters, a separate and larger organization, was one of the first unions to endorse his challenger, John Kerry. 60,000 members of the IAFF in 19 states do not have the right to collectively bargain. Kerry is supporting a bill that would give them this right. Bush opposes it.
I hear these politicians on the Republican side of the fence running around the country giving speeches, talking about the heroes of New York, you know, who ran up those stairs to give their lives so that other people might be able to live. But they don't honor those people other than in words.
Peter Gorman, president of the Uniformed Fire Officers Association of New York City, says his members are voting for Kerry because of his co-sponsorship of the original Fire Act legislation.
From fiscal year 2004 to 2005, George W. Bush is proposing to cut $800 million nationwide on Homeland Security.
Kerry has also vowed to employ 100,000 new firefighters and is a co-sponsor of the Staffing for Adequate Fire and Response legislation.
Since 1990, there's been 800,000 additional citizens in the city of New York, and that's U.S. Government Census Bureau statistics. The facts don't lie. They had no right to close those firehouses. We're doing more with less every day.
Despite repeated phone calls, the UFA declined to comment.
A 10-year lawsuit over the closing of a McDonnell Douglas plant in Tulsa, Oklahoma, came to an end on Thursday. The federal judge presiding over the case approved an agreement ordering the company to pay former employees $8.1 million in back wages. After attorney fees, the more than 1,000 former workers at the military aircraft plant who filed the suit will each receive about $5,800 each. Last year, the workers agreed to settle disputes over pension and health care benefits for $36 million. The issue of back pay remained unresolved after the company appealed. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Work Zone Safety Clearinghouse, work zone-related fatalities dropped substantially last year. In 2003, there were 1,028 work zone deaths nationwide as compared to 2002, when there was 1,186. Texas holds the record for most deaths over the last 2 years with a combined total of 358. Georgia is the most improved, going from 118 fatalities in 2002 and dropping to 24 in 2003.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I saw her today at the reception.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Mexicans who disagree with U.S.-style economic policies have resorted to some unusual tactics lately. This is fascinating. We are looking here at the situation that's happening in Mexico right now, very possibly at the future of the United States. Now, you know, I realize it may sound a little strange to say that a country that many folks regard as a third world nation, or something between a first and third, a poorer nation, that could be an indicator of what's going to happen in the United States. Frankly, I would say Argentina is a closer one, because the economic policy that the Bush administration is pursuing right now, massive debt, massive trade deficits, functioning like a third world country. We have now shifted. Before Ronald Reagan came into office, we were the world's major creditor. More countries around the world and more people in those countries owed us money than anybody else in the world. We were the largest supplier of credit to the world. Now, after 30 years of conservative economics, or 24 years of conservative economics, we are the world's largest debtor. We owe any number of countries around the world more than anybody else in the world. We are the country, of all the countries in the world that are in debt, we are the most in debt. Before Ronald Reagan came into office and began conservative economics in the United States, we were one of the world's largest importers of raw materials and exporters of finished goods. We brought in steel ore, we brought in just the basic raw, nickel, aluminum, bauxite, whatever. We brought in raw materials and we shipped out washing machines, cars, computers, I mean, you name it. We made it. Shoes, shirts, blue jeans. We imported cotton and we made Levi's. We were an importer. Yeah, we grew a lot of cotton here as well, but we were importing raw materials. We were even importing lumber. Here in Vermont, you get very aware of that. We were importing massive amounts of lumber from Canada. So and from other countries, of course, you know, the hardwoods from countries where there's still jungles, from Southeast Asia, from South America. We were before Ronald Reagan came in, the world's leading, certainly, it depends on how you slice and dice it, in absolute numbers, per capita numbers, or per GDP numbers. We were certainly competing with Japan, and if you looked at Europe as a block, but it wasn't back then. But in any case, we were one of the world's leading importers of raw materials and exporters of finished goods. We are now the world's leading importer of finished goods and exporter of raw materials. These are the definitions of a third world country, my friends. We import now finished computers and finished cars and finished clothing and finished shoes and computer cartridges, you name it. Walk around to Walmart and find me one thing made in the United States. Well, maybe you can find one. Maybe you'll find a few. But what? 1%? 2%? It's going to be very, very little. And it's not just Walmart. I don't mean this as an indictment of Walmart. Walk into any store and look for the products that were made in the United States. We are the world's leading importer now of finished goods. And what are we sending out in exchange for those finished goods? Because you do have to, it has to go both ways. You can't just bring things in from other, you know, buy things from other countries and just say, you know, as Wimpy used to say, those of you old enough to remember the Popeye cartoon, I'd gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. You can't do that. Well, you can to some extent, actually. Under this administration, we're going to run up, it looks like, about a $300 to $400 billion trade deficit this year. That is, we are going to import $300 to $400 billion more than we export, which means, again, we have to create IOUs, another form of debt, But we're trying to close that gap by exporting corn, soybeans, cotton, minerals. You have big chunks of the American Midwest and West now where gold mines are owned by foreign companies, iron mines are owned by foreign companies, copper mines are owned by foreign companies that are exporting to foreign countries. We are now one of the world's leading exporters of lumber. We are exporting our raw materials. We are selling off our natural wealth. And other countries are taking those raw materials, adding to them labor and the intellectual property of, you know, the knowledge of how to turn a raw material into a finished good, and selling them back to us. That's what third world countries do. They export raw material and they import finished goods because they're not sufficiently sophisticated to make the finished goods themselves. Or because they have such lousy leadership that their leaders have not protected domestic industries that manufacture finished goods. Which, of course, is how it happened to us. With Ronald Reagan, George Herbert Walker Bush, Bill Clinton, and George W. Bush. Well, something very similar is happening in Mexico, and the Mexicans are very upset about this. And this is an article I recommend that you grab a copy of today's Wall Street Journal. It's the front page of the international section. Free markets spur protest is the headline. The subhead, across Latin America, many feel let down by economic changes. This is an article by David Lunau, Dateline Mexico City. Mexicans who disagree with U.S.-style economic policies have resorted to some unusual tactics lately. Recently, government health care workers protesting possible cuts to their pensions threw the severed heads of pigs at government buildings. In July, farmers opposed to free trade sacrificed a cow on the major avenue in Mexico City. Are you getting this? They are not only demonstrating, they're demonstrating creatively. Just as surprising as the methods used by protesters, however, have been their sheer numbers, writes Lunau in today's Wall Street Journal. In the past week, Mexico has witnessed some of the largest protests since the late 1980s. Now, you'll remember, you know, back during the Clinton, George Herbert Walker Bush, the 1992 debates, right, and Ross Perot, Clinton saying, oh, we got to have free trade, we got to have NAFTA and GATT. And Bush is going, yeah, we got to have free trade, we got to have NAFTA and GATT. And Ross Perot's going, you do that, you're going to see this giant sucking sound. And he's got all his charts and graphs and things, and he's holding them up. Well, the giant sucking sound, of course, has happened. We have gone from a nation that manufactures things to a nation that says, you want fries with that? And it's now happening in Mexico because what has happened, free trade is a euphemism. It's a catchphrase. It's a phony phrase that actually means international business done of, by, and for the benefit of multinational corporations, and to hell with the needs of the individual countries involved. And because Mexico has a somewhat higher standard of living than Guatemala, or than China, or Malaysia. They were closer to us. So at first, a bunch of business went to Mexico, but then it started fleeing. You know, the maquiladoras. Then it started fleeing Mexico. They're facing the same problems we are. It goes on, just as surprising as the methods used by the protesters have been their sheer numbers. In the past week, Mexico has witnessed, I read you that part, manifesting growing disillusionment with a lack of economic growth despite two decades of ambitious change to open borders to trade and reduce the government's role in the economy. See, this is what happens when cons who hold tenaciously to this religious belief that Ayn Rand laid out in Atlas Shrugged, that seized Europe for much of the 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries. I mean, the Dickens, you know, the time of Dickens where Bob Cratchit and Ebenezer Scrooge, you know, Scrooge, the ownership class owned everything, and the working class, you know, was just desperately afraid that they may lose their job. They couldn't afford health care for their families, poor Tiny Tim. They could barely afford a Christmas dinner. Even that wasn't, you know, much. The only way that was able to survive in England was that the Khans of England of that day, of the United Kingdom, were saying to the people, well, this industrialization, all of this mechanization, this industrial revolution, this is going to ultimately work to your benefit. Someday machines are going to do so much of this stuff that more and more of the working poor will be able to become members of the middle class. Will have more leisure. And, of course, it turned out it wasn't true. What was true was that finally it reached a point, it got so bad, the worldwide depression of the 1930s, that countries all over the world started adopting regulation of the marketplace. They realized that an absolutely free marketplace, a laissez-faire economics, only does work marvelously to produce a small class of very wealthy people and a large class of terrified working poor, and nothing in the middle. That is the inevitable and 100% always the result. I defy you to find any time in history when unfettered laissez-faire capitalism, absolutely unregulated, totally free markets, that is to say, markets controlled by wealth and corporate forces, produced anything other than that. And it's happening in Mexico right now, as over the last 20 years, Mexico has been engaging in conservative economics just like we have. And here we go. Many, again, back to the article, many Latin Americans feel that economic changes during the 1980s and 90s, such as selling state-run industries, failed to improve their lives. He goes on to add, only 19% are satisfied with the way the market has worked in their countries. What a surprise. Despite higher average incomes, poverty has worsened in part of the region, creating the sense that changes help the haves more than the have-nots. Well, that's how laissez-faire capitalism works. This is not an indictment of capitalism. I'm in favor of capitalism. I'm not in favor of unregulated capitalism. Unregulated capitalism literally means the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. It's that simple. The big fish eat the little fish until there's nothing left but until all the medium-sized fish are gone. And there's nothing left but a few big fish and a whole lot of little fish running around frantically trying to avoid being eaten. The Latino Barometro poll shows privatization is public enemy number one, writes David Ludow in today's Wall Street Journal. It was 75% of Mexicans saying they are unsatisfied with the sale of state companies. In some cases, he adds, privatizations were handled badly or riddled with corruption. Governments also didn't regulate the new companies to ensure competition to drive down prices. See, that's the thing. You cannot, as Senator Sherman figured out in 1881 when they passed the Sherman Antitrust Act, you cannot allow corporations to get so large that they dominate marketplaces. You no longer have competition, and competition is necessary for free enterprise. See, I'm totally in favor of free enterprise. Unrestrained capitalism is anti-free enterprise. It destroys free enterprise. And now here we're seeing it. They go on, and, you know, the costs of privatization are more visible. As many as 150,000 Argentines lost their job during the sale of state enterprises in the 1980s and 1990s. They now form the backbone of that country's Piquetero protest movement. And then they talk about Vicente Fox. This is incredible. He put in a bill almost identical in spirit, certainly, to what George W. Bush was talking about at the Republican convention with the whole retirement thing that basically wouldn't affect current retirees, but future retirees are going to go into this kind of pay-as-you-go program. And they pointed out, you know, Mr. Fox scored his first significant legislative success in 4 years recently with a bill that tries to begin addressing a cash-strapped state pension system by requiring new workers at the healthcare agency to pay more of their retirement costs. Although the bill didn't affect existing workers, the reaction was swift. On August 31st, 200,000 people took to the streets to rail against the measures. Healthcare workers walked off the job during Mr. Fox's annual State of the Union address. They soon were joined by the union at the state electric utility, who fear Mr. Fox wants to privatize electricity services. And they finally, he wraps this thing up. The protests may be a symptom of worse to come if Mr. Fox attempts to dismantle what remains of Mexico's economic and political past. And this is exactly the Bush agenda. And I predict will be exactly the Bush results. 1-866-889-8894. Let's pick up a couple of calls here. Lynn in Eureka, California on the line. Hey, Lynn, what's up?
Well, I have a couple of things. One, I'd like to kind of make a point, and the other is I'd like to ask you a question.
Sure.
The point I'd like to make is sometimes it seems to me like you give business a pass saying, well, they're following the current rules. And I say, well, in Abu Ghraib, the guards were following the rules, too. What we need to
that's,
do is...
That's why Don, that's why Don Rumsfeld... No. Hang on, Lynn. That's why Don Rumsfeld is the guy who should be on trial right now, because those soldiers actually were following dictates from the White House and from the Department of Defense.
I agree, but I think that they should also have... I think that right is right, whether there's rule... You know, we know better than to follow rules like that. And I think business knows better than to follow some of the rules that they follow.
I agree with you philosophically, but in practical application, we have seen from the extreme of what happened in Germany in the 30s to the mid-range of what's happening in the United States right now that in the real world, it ain't that way.
Okay. The question I have is about the Newt Gingrich speech.
Yeah.
Quote. I'm trying to find out where I can find that so I can download it and print it up really big and stick it in my front lawn.
Where Gingrich advised the Republicans to go with wedge issues?
Yes.
I'll have to look around and see if I still have the paper that I printed that out on. I've got a large stack of stuff here that I hang on to, but usually at the end of every day
we toss it.
Yeah, because otherwise we'd just be drowning in paper, so I'm not sure. But I would think that with a Google search you ought to be able to find that.
I did a Google search. I didn't find that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll try and track it down and I'll report back to you here on this program.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Lynn. I appreciate the call. 1-866-889-8894. Jake in Ohio, hang on the line. We'll pick you up on the other side of this break. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you, exposing the con in conservative.
This is Vionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level. And you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Some are charging that there's a connection between Halliburton being awarded no-bid contracts in Iraq and the fact that Vice President Dick Cheney used to run the company. Of course there's a connection. Would you rather do business with a bunch of strangers who may charge less or with a dear, dear friend who knows what's in your heart? That's why Dick gets $1 million severance check from us at Halliburton every year. It reminds him who his friends are. Friends shouldn't have to compete for contracts. Friends don't need government oversight, and friends know who their friends are. Cronyism sounds like such a bad word. Try friendship instead. A really lucrative friendship. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for the facts on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
A magnetic compass is the oldest and sometimes most important piece of navigational equipment on board most ships. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Alan Gurney begins his new book, Compass, with the story of a brand new yacht on its maiden voyage in 1998. The luxurious boat bristled with computerized navigational equipment, but Gurney says the electronic systems went dead the first night at sea, and there was no magnetic compass on board.
So there they were, stuck on this high-tech yacht with this great array of screens and batteries and keyboards, rather like a James Bond movie. And they didn't know where the hell they were sailing.
Gurney, a former yacht designer himself, says the boat eventually made it back to port. But he says the wayward yacht's experience underscores our continued dependence on this simple device. Gurney traces the history of the compass from its first documented use in the year 1187. He says the device was so valued that sailors in the 1500s had a hand pinned to the mast with a dagger if they were caught messing with it, usually a magnetized needle in a bowl of water. Gurney says as vital as the compass was, it had its limits. The Earth's magnetic poles do not lie directly under its geographic poles, a phenomenon known as magnetic variation.
The needle points north, but it's not to true north, of course. It's to magnetic north. And it took centuries before people realized that magnetic north changes. And also, if you're sailing up in the high latitudes in the Arctic and you're getting closer to the north magnetic pole, the pull of the magnetic field tends to make the needle very skittish.
The problem of magnetic variation was solved in the 18th century with the help of the astronomer Edmund Halley. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square.
Yeah, democracy is coming now. Hopefully on November 2nd, we'll see more of it here in the United States. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jake in Montrose. Is it Montrose or Montrose, Ohio? Hey, Jake. Listen to the telephone, not your radio. Jake, I'm going to put you back on hold for a second, and we'll take a call from Ken in Warren, Michigan. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Are you
there? Yeah. Is that Jake?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry about that.
I punched the wrong button. My fault.
My connector on the phone here, I think, has an intermittent connection, and I could hear you. I don't think you could hear me.
No, that's fine. What's up, Jake?
I truly enjoy your show, Tom.
Thank you.
One of the few beacons in the abyss.
Thank you.
But I have a long time. I rarely am in line with the mainstream Democrat and Republican candidates, and I have realized that my vote, other than for a Democrat, the mainstream Democrat or the Republican, is largely a wasted vote. I mean, other than making a stand,
yeah,
you know, a statement.
Well, at least at the national level, at least this year. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, and I've...
But that doesn't mean that you can't support third-party candidates. If you're in favor of the Reform Party or if you're in favor of the Green Party or something, I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do to support a third political party short of voting for, you know, Ralph Nader or whatever, you know, something that's going to simply help George Bush get elected.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I
think that in this case that a vote for Nader, which I philosophically am probably a little closer to than definitely closer than George Bush, but anyway, it's been kind of a dilemma how to vote, and I think I have come up with a system that might solve the problem for
and truly
make us a multi-party.
Great. We've got about a half a minute, Jake. Go for it.
Okay. Well, essentially what you do is take all the named candidates plus one and make that a multiplier for the first candidate on the ballot. Your first choice, I mean. So here we have Bush, Kerry, Nader, Cobb, and a space for a write-in. So that's five candidates, and your first choice weighs 5 points, and then you make your second choice.
Yeah, what you're describing is a variation on instant runoff voting. That's a system like that's how it works in Australia. You pick your first choice, your second choice, your third, fourth choice, and the person who gets the fewest votes gets dropped off the ballot, and then they recalculate until you've got more than 50% for a candidate. And it's called instant runoff voting. It works very well. And it's something that is happening in communities all across the United States, and we need to make happen nationally. Jake, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546. Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A two-month-long strike by oil workers in Norway, the world's third largest oil exporter, has been answered with a lockout. The Norwegian Shipowners Association announced the lockout on Thursday of last week. The Norwegian Shipowners Association announced the lockout on Thursday of last week, and it involves 3 drilling rigs, 1 production ship, and 8 drilling stations. About 200 members of the Norwegian Federation of Oil Workers Union have been on strike in a labor dispute seeking job security with the Norwegian State Oil Company. Work stoppage caused by the lockout will result in 700 workers laid off and about 30,000 barrels a day lost. The Norwegian government has the power to end the dispute at any time, but has said it is not yet ready to intervene.
During his presidential nomination speech, George Bush briefly outlined his plans to create jobs and improve America's struggling economy. He proposed additional funding for job training programs and making his tax cuts permanent. Secretary of Labor Elaine Chao attended the Republican National Convention.
Well, union membership is declining. Organized labor now comprise about 12.8% of the workforce. Union members comprise only 8.2% of the private sector workforce. So the labor movement has a number of issues that they need to be concerned about.
Chao is part of an administration that opposes the Employee Free Choice Act, which would eliminate many of the barriers to union organizing. She also supported recent cuts to overtime protections and favors allowing states to opt out of any federal minimum wage increase.
360 workers locked out of a titanium plant in Niles, Ohio for more than 10 months have rejected another contract proposal. Workers at the plant, represented by the United Steelworkers of America, were originally locked out when they rejected a proposal by BMI Titanium in October of 2003. At a meeting explaining the vote held in late August, union members said they could not accept the current proposal because it did not afford basic protections the workers need to provide for their families. The 5-year contract provided no raises for the workers for the first 3 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. According to the Progressive Government Institute, Elaine Chao is the most conservative Secretary of Labor of the last half century. Ms. Chao has gone on record against the UN, overtime pay, and ergonomic regulations. She also canceled OSHA health and safety training grants to 19 nonprofit organizations and halted the publication of monthly mass layoff reports. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My husband went to school part-time. He's got a bachelor's degree in computer science. So far, no job. And it's been 3.5 years. The computer science industry was downsizing, sending jobs overseas. George Bush said Americans need to retrain. My God, how many times do we have to retrain? Why not bring these jobs back home? I voted for George Bush. I feel very betrayed.
Move On PAC is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
See if this sounds familiar. A sour and rabidly partisan Vietnam vet named John O'Neill is plucked from obscurity by the Republican White House to be used as an attack dog against John Kerry. O'Neill creates a hokey citizens group as a political front for no other purpose than to pound Kerry about his war service. But the assault I'm describing is not this year's effort by O'Neill to ambush Kerry with a dummy operation he has labeled Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Rather, I'm talking about O'Neill's first tour of duty in service to a Republican president's campaign, none other than Richard Nixon's. Yes, Tricky Dick, the guy who invented our detestable modern-day politics of personal destruction, was the one who first unleashed O'Neill on Kerry, way back in 1971. Kerry then was the just-returned war hero who was so eloquently speaking out and helping turn public opinion against Nixon's expanding war. So Tricky Dick decided to try killing the messenger through a nasty personal attack on Kerry. Of course, a president can't be seen doing such dirty work himself, so Nixon's top political hatchet man, the infamous Chuck Colson, recruited O'Neill specifically to make the hit on Kerry. Back then, O'Neill called his front group Vietnam Veterans for a Just Peace. But it was the exact same kind of negative scam he's fronting today. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's unclear whether George W. has personally met with O'Neill to urge him on, as Nixon did in 1971, but it's clear that the Bush political operation and funding network is behind O'Neill's smear campaign. Not only is the truth of this coming out, but so is the hilarious knee-slapping irony of watching George trying to shuck and jive around the smear. Since Bush can't even produce proof that he showed up for his National Guard duty in Mississippi, he shouldn't be trying to spit on the 5 medals that Kerry earned in combat.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, across the United States, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org as well. Beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. Ain't technology amazing? Anyhow, 7 minutes after the hour. And I have mentioned in the past, in fact, actually, we've been kind of keeping a running total. It's been 752 days as of today since the anthrax attack in Washington, D.C., which, just by coincidence, no doubt, happened to be aimed at the two people who could have stopped the Patriot Act and who were making noises about stopping the Patriot Act. Tom Daschle, the head of the Democrats, and you'll recall at that point in time, the Democrats had considerable power because of the defection of Jim Jeffords. And Pat Leahy, who was chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which had to release the Patriot Act from committee in order for it to be elected, voted on. These two guys both ended up with anthrax attacks, you know, bang, in their office. And they had to move out of their offices. They didn't have access to papers, blah, 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 blah. And what we got was the USA Patriot Act. Well, now a remarkable filmmaker, Chip Duncan, a filmmaker, author, lecturer, president of the Duncan Group, has produced a documentary which will be playing this fall on public television, titled The Cost of Freedom, Civil Liberty, Security, and the USA Patriot Act. And we were able to get Chip here on the program. Hey, Chip, welcome to the Tom Hartmann Show.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm pleased you could make it. This bill, the USA Patriot Act, which is an acronym that stands for Uniting and Strengthening America by Providing Appropriate Tools Required to Intercept and Obstruct Terrorism. A little bit of
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
it's a mouthful.
It's pretty grim. It passed by 98-1. And first of all, why do you think it passed 98-1?
Well, you're saying it passed by 98-1. That was the Senate vote. It passed overwhelmingly also in the House by a 5-1 ratio. all I can say is I think it's shocking that it passed by that kind of margin, but obviously it speaks to the fear that had gripped America around 9/11. I happen to live in Wisconsin, where our Senator Russ Feingold was the one senator who voted against it.
Good on you. I mean, congratulations. But that's, you know, one guy. I mean, it's none of the senators could have possibly read this thing before they voted on it.
Well, one of the criticisms of the behind the passage of the act was that they didn't have time. It's a 300 and I heard your lead in about Daschle and Leahy, and certainly you know, there are people who think that there may have been some kind of conspiracy around that, but those two gentlemen did vote in favor of it. In fact, I've always been a little shocked that they did.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of reasons why it passed, and I think fear is probably the biggest one.
What are the other reasons?
Well, you know, one of the major criticisms of it, especially from the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, is that people didn't have a chance to read the bill, that there was no time, that the Bush administration had more or less forced it on them. And there was a big political need for response, I think, you know, or that's the argument, that there was a need for quick response. A lot of people argue that
in other words,
we have to pass as quickly as it did simply because it had been sitting around in the Justice Department waiting for just this type of event.
Right.
I'm really a little surprised that it passed as overwhelmingly as it did, but fortunately it does have a sunset clause. A lot of what's in the Patriot Act sunsets in 05, and so I think it's an election year issue, and certainly a lot needs to be looked at in terms of what kind of presidency do we want. A lot of the critics of the Patriot Act say it smacks of monarchy, and that it was forced upon the Congress. But also in 05, no matter who the president is, the Senate and the House are going to have another chance to take this up.
Yeah, the sunset provisions of this remind me of two other pieces of legislation that limited civil rights that in order to get passed, had to have sunset provisions in them. The Alien and Sedition Act of 1798 was timed to, its major provisions were timed to expire on March 1st, 1800, which was the day that John Adams would leave office if he didn't win the election.
Right.
And in fact, when Jefferson took office, the first thing he did was basically repeal the entire set of the acts, or most all of the acts, released from prison all of the newspaper editors that Adams had put there, and in fact even ordered Congress to pay restitution to people who had been imprisoned, including Congressman Matthew Lyon of Vermont, who ran for and was reelected to Congress from his jail cell in Vergennes, Vermont, put there because he had dared to criticize the Republican, or the back then they were called the Federalists, from the floor of the House, going after Roger Griswold and John Adams. The other one, though, that I thought was real interesting, that I think most Americans don't know about, is what is generally referred to as the Enabling Acts. The full name of it was an act for the protection of patriotic citizens of Germany. And it was passed in 1934. as I recall, in March or April of 34, it might have been 33, which February 28th, was it 33 that the Reichstagsgebäude was burned? In any case, it was just a few months after the Reichstag building was burned by Marius van der Lubbe, or so history tells us. Hitler rose to power on the basis of this, on his declared war on terror, and he passed the Enabling Acts, which gave the police the ability to listen in on telephone conversations, open mail, sneak into people's homes without warrants, and hold people without due process for a limited period of time. And that had a four-year sunset provision on it as well. And, you know, if the national emergency was over, and it was the only way he could get it through. In the case of the United States with the Alien and Sedition Acts, Jefferson becoming elected ended the Alien and Sedition Acts. In the case of Germany, 4 years later, Hitler was still in charge, and he simply rolled over the sunset provision on the Enabling Acts. It was, you know, just said, you know, got to push through the parliament. And so don't you think that that's sort of archetypal? I mean, that is really this pretty much how it's going to play out. If John Kerry gets elected, odds are a lot of these provisions are going to sunset, and perhaps even some of the more odious parts of the Patriot Act will be reversed. Whereas if George Bush gets elected, not only are we going to have what we have, we're going to have even more. What do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, I'd like to mention that you've done something here in the discussion that our show does as well, and that is that we go back and we look at history. And I think history is one of the greatest teachers we have in terms of where we want to be in this debate between security and civil liberties.
Yeah.
The documentary looks at the Alien and Sedition Acts. It also looks all the way through the 20th century, which was really the century that defined who we are when it comes to civil liberties. That's when most of the great court cases were fought around civil liberties. As it relates to the future, I can only tell you that I like to ask the question, what kind of a government do we really want? What kind of a presidency do we want? Certainly those who would argue in favor of the Patriot Act are arguing for a stronger presidency with greater executive power and executive privilege. That's the other thing our show does, is we don't just stop at the Patriot Act, because one of the things that I would call the extreme right and the left have done around the Patriot Act is use it as an umbrella of sorts for all of the things they don't like about security issues in this administration. And so we actually go way beyond the Patriot Act, and we talk about military tribunals and enemy combatants and the way President Bush has used executive powers, which, as you know, it sounds like you're quite a historian, as you know, it's not well defined in the Constitution. And even the current Supreme Court ruled against him back in June, saying, wait a minute, you're going too far.
Yeah, although I haven't seen a big rush to release all those folks. I mean, they're slowly doing this. It seems.
Well, and I'm not an expert on this by any stretch, but what has happened since then is that the administration, the Department of Justice in particular, has gone back to using federal courts to try and get around the power of the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly they've decided they want to hold these guys. So,
yeah,
you know, they're doing everything they can. But I think what listeners need to be aware of is, you know, that this is a big issue. The Patriot Act is in many ways an umbrella for this larger issue of security versus civil liberties. And throughout American history, you know, where we've resolved things is that one is not mutually exclusive of the other. We really can be a secure nation, and we really can protect individual civil liberties.
We're talking with Chip Duncan, who's a filmmaker who has a film coming out, a documentary that will be aired this fall on public television. Do you have a date yet, Chip?
Well, it's premiering October 3rd through our flagship station, which is Iowa Public Television, a great station down in Des Moines that covers the state of Iowa. So they're doing three primetime broadcasts, but then it rolls out nationwide. And the challenge of working in public television is that affiliates can air it when they choose.
I see.
The good news is they're all airing it, and we know with certainty that it's doing really well with primetime broadcasts in the swing states.
So you just keep your eyes out for it. It's called The Cost of Freedom, and the subtitle, Civil Liberty, Security, and the USA Patriot Act, this fall on public television. Chip, Russ Feingold, your senator there in Wisconsin, was the only person who, as you mentioned, was the only person who voted against the Patriot Act. Why did he do that? What did he have to say about it? And what was the consequence to him of that?
Well, first answer to the answer to your first question is that he was the one person who stood up in the Senate, and we have footage of him in the show, who basically said, "Wait a minute, guys, this is a 350-page bill, and we haven't really had time to read it. There was an anthrax problem going on in Washington, as you recall, and so a lot of the Senate office buildings, in fact, 51 Senate office buildings were closed at the time." And he was saying, wait, why don't we read it first? I mean, that's the upshot of what he was saying. But actually, if you don't mind me quoting, Russ,
please.
On the Senate floor, he said, "Preserving our freedom is one of the main reasons that we are now engaged in this new war on terrorism. We will lose that war without firing a shot if we sacrifice the liberties of the American people." Now, you know, I think in the case of Russ, that was a pretty courageous stand and a pretty courageous thing to do, to be the only senator who voted against it. You asked the second part of your question was, what has happened since then? What were the consequences? Well, living in Wisconsin, I can only tell you that Feingold is leading in the polls and that he has rallied support from conservatives and liberals, or the right and the left in this case, in large part because people saw that as a courageous thing to do.
Yeah. That's marvelous. And how many communities across the United States now have passed resolutions against the act?
It's getting close to 300. In fact, you know what's interesting, if you don't mind me mentioning our website.
That's fine. We've got about 20 seconds.
.com. A lot of this information is on our website, and we're updating it regularly. And
okay.
Because the show does, I think, very nicely represent all different perspectives on the Patriot Act, we have links there to the government website, the Department of Justice, to the ACLU. People can go to DuncanEntertainment.com and find out all of this information. And then, of course, hopefully find a local broadcast listing for the show itself.
Great. Chip Duncan, his new documentary, The Cost of Freedom, Civil Liberty, Security, and the USA Patriot Act. It'll be on a public television station near you this fall. And Chip, one more time, your URL quickly.
It's DuncanEntertainment.com.
DuncanEntertainment.com. Thanks a lot, Chip, for being with us. 20 minutes.
Thank you very much.
Minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit.
So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Remember the election of 2000? Frightening. But we can all thank our lucky stock portfolios that when the shouting and those silly recounts were over, the Bush-Cheney team emerged with a clear 5-4 majority. Well, we don't want to go through that again, so you can bet your last $1 million that the next election won't be all messy. No dimpled ballots, no hanging chads, in fact, no paper at all. Thanks to our good friends at Diebold and their touchscreen voting machine, we can ensure that swing state swing our way. Just think, Chad will be just another country to liberate, and all Americans can look forward to 4 more wars. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Not only do you have a reason to live, you got a reason to vote. But don't give up. For sure don't give up. You know, we're hearing, one of the things that we're hearing a lot about is the fact that there's this huge swing vote population, and so many of the swing voters are women, particularly single women. You hear different numbers from different sources. The last number I heard of 33 million single women who are not registered to vote, who are eligible to vote in the United States. The number, I mean, who knows what the actual number is, but it's huge. It's huge, and it could be a huge demographic. And here we have, well, apparently there's a documentary going around about the right, you know, how women acquired the right to vote and what led up to it. Excuse me. And this was forwarded to me, and I frankly am not certain of its source. It's interesting. Yesterday I shared something with you, and somebody sent me an email. Well, we'll get to that. About, you know, exactly where it came from. Maybe somebody will send me an email on where this guy, or a note, you know, or drop it into our, one of the folks in our chat room perhaps will know, will recognize this. A short history lesson on the privilege of voting, it's titled. The women were innocent and defenseless. And by the end of the night, they were barely alive. 40 prison guards wielding clubs with their warden's blessing went on a rampage against the 33 women wrongly convicted of obstructing sidewalk traffic. They beat Lucy Byrne, chained her hands to the cell bars above her head, and left her hanging for the night, bleeding and gasping for air. They hurled Dora Lewis into a dark cell, smashed her head against an iron bed, and knocked her cold. Her cellmate, Alice Kosu, thought Lewis was dead and suffered a heart attack. Additional affidavits describe the guards grabbing, dragging, beating, choking, slamming, pinching, twisting, and kicking the women. Thus unfolded the night of terror on November 15th, 1917, when the warden at the Occoquan Workhouse in Virginia ordered his guards to teach a lesson to the suffragists imprisoned there because they dared to picket President Woodrow Wilson's White House for the right to vote. For weeks, the women's only water came from an open pail. Their food, all of it colorless slop, was infested with worms. When one of their leaders, Alice Paul, embarked on a hunger strike, they tied her to a chair, forced a tube down her throat, and poured liquid into her until she vomited. She was tortured like this for weeks until word was smuggled out to the press. So writes the author of this original piece, which has been forwarded and forwarded and forwarded around the internet, mostly by women to women. I received it from a woman, and she said, I'm sending this to all my female friends. So refresh my memory, she says. Some women won't vote this year because why exactly? We have carpool duties. We have to get to work. Our vote doesn't matter. It's raining. I thought it was a marvelous and poignant piece. I can only speak for myself. I intend to vote. And even though I only have one vote, I intend to cast it. And I encourage you, whomever you may be, whatever group you may be a part of, whatever your political philosophy may be, to cast your vote as well. And perhaps even more important, to do everything you can to hold responsible to we the people, both our elected officials and those people in the various states and counties who are responsible for the apparatus on which we vote. This electronic voting machine scandal concerns me greatly. And I please, when you go to vote this November, or if you vote in one of the primaries between now and then, ours here in Vermont is coming up in the next week, I guess, September 14th. When you show up to vote, if you're asked to vote on an electronic voting machine, make your concerns known. I would like to vote on something that provides a paper trail that can be audited. Thank you very much. 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A two-month-long strike by oil workers in Norway, the world's third largest oil exporter, has been answered with a lockout. The Norwegian Shipowners Association announced a lockout on Thursday of last week. The Norwegian Shipowners Association announced a lockout on Thursday of last week, and it involves 3 drilling rigs, 1 production ship, and 8 drilling stations. About 200 members of the Norwegian Federation of Oil Workers Union have been on strike in a labor dispute seeking job security with the Norwegian State Oil Company. Work stoppage caused by the lockout will result in 700 workers laid off and about 30,000 barrels a day lost. The Norwegian government has the power to end the dispute at any time, but has said it is not yet ready to intervene.
During his presidential nomination speech, George Bush briefly outlined his plans to create jobs and improve America's struggling economy. He proposed additional funding for job training programs and making his tax cuts permanent. Secretary of Labor Elaine Chao attended the Republican National Convention.
Well, union membership is declining. Organized labor now comprise about 12.8% of the workforce. Union members comprise only 8.2% of the private sector workforce. So the labor movement has a number of issues that they need to be concerned about.
Chao is part of an administration that opposes the Employee Free Choice Act, which would eliminate many of the barriers to union organizing. She also supported recent cuts to overtime protections and favors allowing states to opt out of any federal minimum wage increase.
360 workers locked out of a titanium plant in Niles, Ohio for more than 10 months have rejected another contract proposal. Workers at the plant, represented by the United Steelworkers of America, were originally locked out when they rejected a proposal by BMI Titanium in October of 2003. At a meeting explaining the vote held in late August, union members said they could not accept the current proposal because it did not afford basic protections the workers need to provide for their families. The 5-year contract provided no raises for the workers for the first 3 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Progressive Government Institute, Elaine Chao is the most conservative Secretary of Labor of the last half century. Ms. Chao has gone on record against the UN, overtime pay, and ergonomic regulations. She also canceled OSHA health and safety training grants to 19 nonprofit organizations and halted the publication of monthly mass layoff reports.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Superfund program is facing some problems. These also go back to the Clinton administration. I got to say, this is many of the problems that we're facing today are not so much the result of Democratic or Republican faux pas, problems, failures, or disasters, but those rather of the growing power of very, very large and powerful, a small handful of very large and powerful corporations and their growing influence over the process of government, which should be responsive to you and me, to we the people, instead of to these very large corporations. The Superfund program. I'll get to that in just a minute. Let's take a couple calls here and move the program along here. 26 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG, I'll bet. Hey, Rick, what's up?
How are you, Tom?
I am.
He was talking to an author named Hendrik Hertzberg, who's known as Rick Hertzberg. Got a new book out, and somehow or other, I'm not sure whether this was in the book or not, but they got around to talking about the 2000 election in Florida and so forth, and it was very interesting that I hadn't heard a whole lot of this around, you know, the year 2000, because we were so concentrated with the state of Florida that it somehow got lost in the mix that the Electoral College and the popular vote were different results. You know,
yeah.
a lot of people I talked to said, "Well, they counted every vote in Florida." Well, they didn't. But even if that had been a totally fair election in Florida, which it wasn't, the fact is that Mr. Gore got something like 500,000 more votes.
Yeah, nearly 600,000. He got Al Gore won by more than 500,000 votes on the popular vote, which was the largest number of votes that any candidate had ever received in the history of the United States for any office, including the office of president.
Except for Reagan in 84.
No, he actually he got, I believe, I may be wrong, but if, as far as I know, he got more votes than Reagan did in 84.
I think you're wrong there, but regardless, he still had the second most.
Yeah. Okay.
And the point was is that, you know, Gore, even though he did fight that quite a bit, you know, and of course this, you know, this deck was stacked. I mean, you had Jeb Bush and Catherine Harris. You had the five Republicans on the U.S. Supreme Court. But the thing of it was is they said if this had been reversed, which, if you remember, the conventional wisdom was that it was probably going to be the other way around,
yeah,
that Bush was going to win the popular vote and lose the electoral vote. And they said there was a plan in place, and I know this is to be true because I saw it on an Internet website, which was not a what you would call a extremist website,
yeah,
or pretty mainstream.
Although that doesn't necessarily make it true. But you can bet that the Republicans had a contingency plan.
What they were going to do was have certain right-wing talk show hosts say, you know, the people's choice is Mr. Bush, and, you know, Mr. Gore should step aside, and the electors should change their votes. And frankly, what this shows me is not only the ruthlessness of the Republicans, but the fact that the Democrats, even though Mr. Gore did fight it somewhat, is they should have fought a little more. I mean, there was certainly enough time between that ridiculous December 12th decision by the U.S. Supreme Court and the inauguration. After all, the inauguration was more than a month away yet.
Yeah.
There would have been plenty of time for Mr. Gore to have thought this a little bit further.
Well,
and I guess my only
except
point
the Bush sued him in the Supreme Court. I mean, the Bush v. Gore, and that put the halt on the whole thing. What you're really pointing out here, Rick, is that the Republican Party has been taken over by a gang of thugs who believe that the ends justify the means, and they'll do anything.
Right.
And only about half of the Democratic Party has been taken over by similar thugs.
But what's sad about that, though, is that there are so many people who call themselves, decent, moral Christian people, and I know this is a different segment than the actual crowd that's running the party. But you know, there's a lot of rank and file people out there that really just seem to ignore all this. They ignore the bad language that people like Cheney and Bush use. It's, you know, they ignore the adultery. They ignore everything Republicans do, which if Democrats do it, it's a deadly sin.
Yeah, the reality, Rick, when you get right down to it, is neither of the two major parties, in this regard, Ralph Nader, in my opinion, is right, that neither of these two parties are even largely responsive to we the people, the electorate. They are both, in both cases, far more responsive to large, deep pockets groups. But that doesn't mean that, it looks to me like the Republicans are completely gone. They've been completely taken over. The Democrats are about halfway there, and I think we can still take them back, frankly.
I did see a debate between the Green Party candidate and the Libertarian. Yeah. I would, you know, as you probably would too, between those two.
That would be interesting. Rick, I got to ask you to wrap it up because we have Victoria Jones with a report from Washington, D.C. waiting
on
the line.
It's very refreshing
here
to see a real debate. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, okay, great. Thanks a lot, Rick. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. And Dave in Humboldt County, Harry in Novi, Michigan, stick around. We'll get to your calls. But first, I wanted to bring on Victoria Jones from the Talk Radio News Service with our daily What's Up in Washington, D.C., What's Up in the World, What's Happening in the News of Politics. Hey, Victoria.
Hey. Well, Congress is back.
Congress is back. Okay.
They actually get back kind of at 2 o'clock. Well, some people say noon, some people say 2. And the Senate Intelligence Committee will start hearings at 2:30. They'll be hearing from the chair and the vice chair of the 9/11 Commission, who are going to continue to hammer away at, you know, the theme of major intelligence reform.
Yeah.
And we are hearing that there's going to be legislation by the end of September on this subject.
Now, Victoria, quick question, pardon my interrupting you. Bob Graham's book is apparently not out yet, but the Miami Sun had apparently acquired a copy of it on Saturday. And in Sunday, we're talking about the fact that Graham is revealing what was in those 26 or 29 pages that the Senate Intelligence Committee wanted to release that the White House didn't want released from the last report of the Intelligence Committee, and that had to do with the fact that the White House was obstructing investigations into a Saudi role in 9/11 and supporting the hijackers of 9/11. Do you think that the fact that Bob Graham has been talking out of school now in his book are the other folks on the Senate Intelligence Committee going to be saying, great Bob, go, we all wanted that out, and it really was a bipartisan, we wanted that information out, and now you put it, or are they going to say, hey Bob, you opened your mouth once too often, sit in the corner?
I think if it wasn't an election year, that's what they would say, thanks, Bobby, wanted it all out. And certainly the commission members, even if they can't applaud him publicly, has said from the very beginning that they want everything out and that there was almost nothing in the report that they felt should have been classified. So they will be pleased, but it is an election year, and I think some of the bipartisanship that we saw in August is going to disappear. And I think Graham will be gone after if indeed there is some interesting stuff in here that was classified. I think he'll be criticized. And I think that the press will do a very insipid job of reporting on it rather than actually looking at whether what he's saying in his book is true and what the implications of this are. They will be afraid once again and will back off and will talk about how terrible it was that he leaked it.
Well, okay. We'll see. And so, anyhow, you were. I interrupted you in midstream. You were talking about what's happening.
Oh no, I was just streaming away about the Senate Intelligence Committee that we'll be hearing from the 9/11 Commission today. Tomorrow, Porter Goss's confirmation hearings begin for the CIA headship.
Yeah.
They're also going to be hearing, I think it's Senate Intelligence, from Mueller, head of the FBI, and the acting head of the CIA, whose name I can never remember. So, and there's going to be some kind of Abu Ghraib hearing going on. So there actually is going to be quite a lot going on in that kind of a realm. Whether anyone's ever going to talk about the incredible budget deficit or, as with our visa bills, we're all going to try and pretend it's not happening and it'll go away, I'm not sure.
Yeah, do you think in the Porter Goss hearings they're going to ask Porter Goss why he proposed that the CIA should have the power to, you know, police powers within the United States to walk into your house or mine and arrest us?
Yes, I think they probably will. And I think they're also going to ask him why he opposed the 9/11 Commission.
Yeah.
But having said that, and they may ask some fairly tough questions in a tough way, and I think they'll do that because they intend to confirm him, and they want to be on record as having asked tough questions.
Yeah.
But, of course, ultimately that doesn't matter at all, as we saw with Ashcroft and with others. If you confirm him, you confirm him.
Yeah, that's ultimately the bottom line. Okay, Victoria, it sounds like the rest of the week your reports are going to be very interesting. Look forward.
I hope so.
Yeah, look forward to the details
bet.
As the week goes on. Victoria, thanks. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow. Okay. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Dave in Humboldt County is on next. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Oh, Tom, wonderful program as always. What troubles me much is the people to whom, those that have been entrusted with these Patriot powers, they have literally been granted the right to invade anybody's computer. And it concerned me very much what happened with Bernie Sanders' efforts to modify the Patriot Act. These are people that just bull over. It concerns me that Russ Holt's bill to be able to have traceable voting machines got slammed as it did.
Yeah.
And somehow we're putting up with all of this. We are... I don't know. It's a feeling like this something needs to be done, and it isn't happening.
Yeah,
and
I can tell you, Dave. There's a, and I'm sure that you probably know this better than I, since you're the psychologist here, and I'm just a psychotherapist. But there is this change in the psychology of a nation when they perceive themselves under siege, under attack, or at war. There's a rallying around. There's a sharpening of the distinctions. There's a sense of black and white that comes to be the dominant paradigm or metaphor of the time. We've got to support our guys even with their failings and their foibles. And that historically has always worked tremendously. Whether it was Nixon with Vietnam, Roosevelt and Truman with World War II, Woodrow Wilson, World War I, Abe Lincoln, the Civil War, that has always worked tremendously to the and John Adams tried to use it, threatening war against the French in 1800. He didn't have the war, so he lost the election. But that has always worked tremendously to the advantage of the party in power and in particular the person in power. There's a particular blindness that comes with being at war. Don't you think that's probably why this is happening?
I don't know. I find, there is about them an arrogance. I have extensive dealing with them, believe it or not. They obstruct those who blow the whistle via the Internet. And they have an attitude of, so what are you going to do about it? Go for it. Try that. When Bush was interviewed by Tim Russert, and Russ had pointed out that he was then way behind in the polls. Are you prepared to be defeated? Oh, no, that isn't going to happen. He's speaking as one who has an inside knowledge about how his Patriot Act is going to be used.
Well, but Dave, if you ask John Kerry right now, how are you going to handle being defeated? He's going to say, I'm going to win, too. I mean, no candidate is going to say, well, gee, if I'm defeated, I think I'll go back to being a school teacher or something. It ain't going to happen. Nobody's going to, That's just
no.
The response you'd expect. I mean, that I don't think that necessarily means guilt.
Somehow we got to prod our members of Congress, any ones that are civilized, to start taking some serious action on this.
I agree with you, Dave. I absolutely agree with you, Dave. And thanks for the call. Good point. And it, not just our members of Congress, but our local elected officials as well. We really need to be starting to hold people's feet to the fire. Harry in Novi, Michigan's on the line, presumably listening on WSDS there in Ann Arbor. Hey, Harry, what's up?
Hi, that's correct. I'm on listening on WSDS. I enjoy your show. I just wanted to make two points.
Uh-huh.
One that I was real pleased to see in today's Detroit Free Press front page, it had an article saying that the Vatican has okayed for Catholics to vote for pro-choice candidates if they agree with them on other issues. And I guess that's been a long-standing policy.
Well, that's interesting.
And it's good to see, because you see some renegade priests and bishops saying, well, you can't take communion and that sort of thing.
Yeah, where did you see this?
You can look it up on the Internet. Today's Detroit Free Press front page.
Okay, cool.
And the second thing I wanted to point out is that I'm unemployed. I had a good-paying union job, and my unemployment benefits ran out after 6 months on August 14th. And I was making good money before, and now I'm trying to get $7.50 an hour, $8 an hour jobs, and they're just not there. And it just makes me upset to see Bush saying that the economy's gone down. It's gone down because we're dropping off the list. We're still unemployed, but we're just dropping off the list because they won't extend unemployment benefits.
Right, you mean Bush saying unemployment is going down. Unemployment is going down because you, Harry, are no longer considered unemployed because you're no longer drawing an unemployment check.
Exactly, the president's dead set against extending unemployment benefits.
Somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 15 million people in the United States who are either unemployed or underemployed, and if you consider underemployed in a broader context of working two jobs, working part-time jobs, working in industries that they're not trained for, it could be as many as 30 to 40 million people, stuff that you're not going to be hearing the Republicans talking about at all.
That's right, and it's just sad that they're getting away with it. Someone should blow the whistle and say this is not an accurate figure.
Well, Harry, I think you just did.
Okay.
And so keep spreading the truth. Keep telling the good word. Tell your friends about WSDS and patronize their sponsors. And thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it.
We'll do. Okay. Thanks.
Good, Harry. 1-866-889-8894. Dean in Santa Fe, New Mexico. That would be on KTRC, right?
Right.
Hey,
KTRC.
Dean, what's up?
Hey, it was good seeing you when you were here, Tom.
Well, thank you, Dean.
Two points I wanted to make. One about the conversation you had earlier concerning... Are you hearing me okay?
I'm hearing you just fine.
Okay, because I was hearing you cut in and out.
No, Ashcroft may be breathing in the background, but we can still hear you.
The conversation on the upcoming possible, hopefully, presidential debates, I hope they don't put it off too long. The Democrats, don't let the Republicans maneuver them too far in, because I'm running for a local office here, Santa Fe County Surveyor on the Green Party, and I was planning on doing most of my campaigning in September and mostly in October, and I just come to realize that October is going to be a lot out as far as a lot of voters are concerned, because there's a lot of groups pushing for absentee ballots and early voting.
Yeah.
And, the Republicans and the Democrats, both their voting campaigns here are advising all their workers to go absentee ballots in the...
I think the bottom line, Dean, is campaign early, campaign continuously, campaign all the way up to the end. I mean, the absentee ballot might only be 5 or 10%, but you need to push
well,
the... Dean, I got to go. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive. survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. On September 17th, I'll be broadcasting live on WTKG AM 1230 in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 p.m. at the corner of Knapp and East Beltline. Drop by early at 11 a.m. in the Wave Room for a get-together, then listen to the show. At 4 p.m. after the show, I'll be at Schuler Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-776-5541. That's 616-776-5541.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
An enormous fire in Yellowstone was a public relations disaster for the National Park Service, but it was business as usual for nature. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The National Park Service enacted a new policy in 1972. It would let wildfires burn unless they threatened unique features or buildings in the parks. For the first 15 years, the strategy worked well, but everything changed in the summer of 1988. Fires swept through drought-stricken Yellowstone National Park, ultimately burning about 36% of the park, almost 800,000 acres. Linda Wallace is the editor of a new book called After the Fires. Wallace says heavy media coverage of the Yellowstone fires missed the mark.
The media, for the most part, is trained to cover what they call disaster stories. And in a disaster story, you have to have a victim. In a natural ecosystem where fire is a natural process, it is a victimless process. So the media ended up making up victims or choosing a victim. Now, there were some people whose houses were burned by the fires, and they are definitely victims. But for the most part, the ecosystem was helped by these fires rather than harmed, and that was a story that didn't come across well.
Wallace says the media described the fires with terms like destruction.
The term destruction is definitely an inappropriate term to apply to natural wildfires in a natural ecosystem. The ecosystem depends upon fire, and when you don't have fire, that is actually more of a destructive process than having a fire burn in a fire-maintained ecosystem.
Wallace says the 1988 fires were not even unique. Studies of sediment layers and other historical evidence revealed past fires of similar size. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me?
Well, hopefully not. 5 minutes before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I earlier in this half hour mentioned the Superfund program facing a big backlog. This article by John Fialka in today's Wall Street Journal. And mentioned my, shall we say, criticism of Bill Clinton, broadly saying, you know, this is stuff that has happened under Democrats as well as Republicans. Well, I should temper that. Bill Clinton actually tried to get the tax on corporations reinstated in 1996. Here's what happened. The Superfund is part of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency's mandate. By Congress was to identify and clean up toxic waste sites where corporations, industries, had dumped poison into water or soil. I don't know of any that constitute the air. You could probably designate some around some of these coal-fired power plant, but that's a whole other issue. Anyhow, where companies had dumped poisons and clean it up. And so Congress decided, hey, if companies are dumping this, the company should pay for the cleanup. And the ideal situation would be, you know, if General Electric dumps a bunch of poison someplace, then General Electric should pay to clean it up. It turns out there were a lot of these dumps, they couldn't figure out who dumped the stuff there. They were, you know, mob operations. They were little third-party dumpies, you know, running dumps, and then they vanished, and there were no records kept. And so they said, okay, we're going to tax all the companies that make toxic poisons, and that tax in aggregate is going to pay for cleaning up Superfund sites. And so, you know, if you make poison that ultimately may get dumped, you pay a tax on it. Well, that tax expired in 1995. And basically, ever since then, the Superfund cleanups have been paid for by you and me. Bill Clinton tried to get it renewed in 96. He failed. And, you know, you could blame it on the Republicans. I'd say if the Democrats were 100% behind it, he probably could have gotten it through, although the Republicans did control Congress, most of Congress at that time, as I recall. But anyhow, since 2001, the Bush administration has actually opposed efforts to renew the tax and said, no, you know, the average taxpayer should be paying for this thing. And now they're even talking about cutting back on the cleanup efforts themselves. The $1.7 billion a year program back in 1980 has started as. And this is downright scary, folks. Downright scary. For some communities, the agency's growing backlog, writes the Wall Street Journal, which is described in internal EPA documents, will mean prolonged health risks for sites that have been placed on the agency's national priority list. So how to fix the Superfund has become a campaign issue, with the Bush administration opposed to new taxes and Kerry saying we should have polluter pay laws. Makes sense to me. Makes absolute sense. Tom Hartman discussing solutions and not false promises.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A two-month-long strike by oil workers in Norway, the world's third-largest oil exporter, has been answered with a lockout. The Norwegian Shipowners Association announced the lockout on Thursday of last week. The Norwegian Shipowners Association announced the lockout on Thursday of last week, and it involves 3 drilling rigs, 1 production ship, and 8 drilling stations. About 200 members of the Norwegian Federation of Oil Workers Union have been on strike in a labor dispute seeking job security with the Norwegian State Oil Company. Work stoppage caused by the lockout will result in 700 workers laid off and about 30,000 barrels a day lost. The Norwegian government has the power to end the dispute at any time, but has said it is not yet ready to intervene.
During his presidential nomination speech, George Bush briefly outlined his plans to create jobs and improve America's struggling economy. He proposed additional funding for job training programs and making his tax cuts permanent. Secretary of Labor Elaine Chao attended the Republican National Convention.
Well, union membership is declining. Organized labor now comprise about 12.8% of the workforce. Union members comprise only 8.2% of the private sector workforce. So
The labor movement has a number of issues that they need to be concerned about.
Chow is part of an administration that opposes the Employee Free Choice Act, which would eliminate many of the barriers to union organizing. She also supported recent cuts to overtime protections and favors allowing states to opt out of any federal minimum wage increase.
360 workers locked out of a titanium plant in Niles, Ohio for more than 10 months have rejected another contract proposal. Workers at the plant, represented by the United Steelworkers of America, were originally locked out when they rejected a proposal by BMI Titanium in October of 2003. At a meeting explaining the vote held in late August, union members said they could not accept the current proposal because it did not afford basic protections the workers need to provide for their families. The five-year contract provided no raises for the workers for the first 3 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Progressive Government Institute, Elaine Chao is the most conservative Secretary of Labor of the last half century. Ms. Chao has gone on record against the UN, overtime pay, and ergonomic regulations. She also canceled OSHA health and safety training grants to 19 nonprofit organizations and halted the publication of monthly mass layoff reports.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My husband went to school part-time. He's got a bachelor's degree in computer science. So far, no job. And it's been 3.5 years. The computer science industry was downsizing, sending jobs overseas. George Bush said Americans need to retrain. My God, how many times do we have to retrain? Why not bring these jobs back home? I voted for George Bush. I feel very betrayed.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Isn't it good to know that the humongous Department of Homeland Security is so wisely spending our tax dollars to defend us from terrorists? Take, for example, the slick mass mailings recently put out by DHS urging America's homeowners to buy flood insurance. Yes, flood insurance. In the midst of various color-coded warnings about imminent terrorist attacks on America, our Homeland Security authorities are spending their time and our money to hawk flood policies on behalf of giant insurance corporations. In a breathless and alarmist letter mailed to thousands of people, including my friend Susan, Mr. Michael Brown, purporting to be the Undersecretary for Emergency Preparedness and Response, warns in bold type that floods can happen anywhere. In a scary red tag warning on the envelope, Undersecretary Brown direly informs us that homeowners insurance doesn't cover you for America's number one natural disaster. So, in his letter, this homeland czar shrieks in blood red type, "Don't delay, get flood insurance today." Ever so helpfully, he even provides the name and number of selected agents in your area who sell these insurance policies, urging you to call your agent. Of course, the vast majority of homeowners don't live in a floodplain and have no need whatsoever to waste their hard-earned money on such insurance. Indeed, my friend Susan lives on an upslope that has never, ever come close to being flooded. Also, Susan is not even a homeowner. Yet in the enclosed brochure, the Homeland authorities declare that flood insurance is for everyone. This is Jim Hightower saying, why is our government shilling for insurance giants, fraudulently peddling policies to people who don't need them and will never collect on them? If the Homeland Security Department doesn't have anything better to do than run insurance scams, Congress should yank its $40 billion a year budget.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
38%. 46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Somebody called in the previous segment of the show, just to pass this along, and said, you know, where can I find that article that you were quoting, in which Newt Gingrich just a few weeks ago got together with a whole bunch of Republicans and said, go for the wedge issues, only talk about wedge issues, always try and focus on wedge issues, Kerry's service in Vietnam, abortion, prayer in schools, flag burning, go for that stuff. It was published first in The Hill, but it's all over the place, actually. If you type in quotes in Google, type in quotes, Newt Gingrich, and then type the words advised in past tense, advised Republicans, and then put in quotes wedge issues, in you'll find 22 different hits, 22 different stories that talk about it. So just for whomever that was, don't frankly remember, but there you go. That's where it is. Tom Hartman here with you, back again. Glad to have you with me. Our number 1-866-889-8894. The website, www.tomhartman.com. You can drop into the chat room from there, the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. Already full of folks, and has been for a couple hours here having a conversation. Just a little news that's a little off the normal political stuff, but things that, given, you know, Bill Clinton had his successful heart surgery. And, by the way, speaking of Bill Clinton, today is a National Attention Deficit Disorder Awareness Day. And speaking of George W. Bush, toss that out. Anyhow, they've known for some time that the omega-3 fatty acids, omega-3 fatty acid called DHA, and omega-6 DHE, some of these fatty acids are helpful in reducing inflammation in the body and therefore preventing arteries from getting clogged. Now they've found that a diet, Health Day publication, a diet rich in the omega-3 fatty acid called DHA, which is found in salmon, halibut, and other cold water fish, and by the way, which the body will produce if you take certain vegetable oils as well, protects the brain from the damage caused by Alzheimer's disease. According to a new study, this was published in the September 2 issue of Neuron. Neuron is, of course, the magazine of the neuroscience industry, the magazine that brain scientists subscribe to. And they find the DHA is crucial for normal brain function in humans. Yeah, I find this fascinating. There is a theory, and it's never... it's never been, you know, like super taken super seriously, but it's just a really interesting theory. It's the aquatic ape theory, and some serious scientists have actually put this thing out, suggesting that there must have been a point in time when the only humans who survived some sort of global catastrophe, as a meteor hitting the Earth or volcanic activity or whatever, were those living near water. Near ocean water specifically, because we have some idiosyncrasies that are not shared by other of the primates, the higher apes, one being that we're hairless, and others being that we need certain nutrients, certain levels of iodine, for example, that they don't, and therefore there's this theory that maybe even for a couple of generations, and we can give birth underwater. You can give birth to a baby underwater, and the baby can survive underwater until the placenta is birthed, which is some time after the original birth, for quite some time. I mean, this is stuff that most other animals can't do, and there's no therefore there. I just, you know, every now and then you find these interesting things. Another one in the crazy science category, or in the crazed, perhaps. We should be crazed about it. Leukemia, This is London, publication in the UK. Leukemia in children could be triggered by pollution passing from the mother to the child in the womb, scientists said today. The study found that insecticides in food production and radioactive particles used in medical diagnosis during pregnancy had passed from the mother to the unborn child. The chemicals then become concentrated in the baby's body because the baby is not excreting. Right, as long as the baby's inside the mother's womb, they're not dumping waste out the way that you and I do when we use the toilet and perspire and breathe for that matter. And babies don't do that, and so these things just concentrate. And they point out the cases of leukemia have gone up fivefold in the last 40 years. And they're suspecting that this is a result of increased pollution in our environment. Strange stuff. Yesterday I shared with you an article about John the Republican, who goes through his day, looks at, and I mentioned, you know, I'm not sure who wrote this, and somebody wrote in and said it's written by John Gray of Cincinnati, Ohio, so I want to give him credit for that. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Will the next shock be oil or debt? I got to tell you what's going on in the EU, by the way. What's happening in Europe? France, Germany, and the rest of Europe right now are in a bit of a fight that, in some ways, mirrors what happened in the States, in the United States, in the 1940s and 1950s after the passage in 1947 of a law, the Taft-Hartley Act, a law that made it possible for states to opt out of the Hatch Act, the 1935 law that made it possible for workers to unionize. And thus we had the right to work states and all that kind of thing. So we got some interesting news for you this hour. Let's first take a couple of phone calls here. Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, the hurricane didn't get you, huh?
This is the second time that it went some other way.
I'm assuming you got a lot of rain, though.
Oh, man. It's definitely wet and wild.
Yeah, yeah. But
everything is just totally soggy and drenchy and humid. And,
yeah.
Oh, my God, I can imagine what those people are doing without air conditioning and, you know, clean showers and food and everything.
Yeah, well,
they're getting a little taste of what all those poor people are going through in Iraq, aren't they?
Well, not just Iraq. About 4 and 5 billion out of the 6 billion people on planet Earth. At least 4 billion don't have regular access to electricity and sanitation. So, yeah.
Isn't that outrageous?
But it is. It's tragic.
But anyway, I'd like to cover 2 points, if you'd allow me, please.
Sure.
Back to the this last thing you were talking about, the babies. You know, we had crack babies. Now we're getting nuke babies, right?
Nuke or newt?
Well,
I see. You could call
nuke,
them.
You know, with
yeah.
Nuclear.
Yeah, with nuclear waste. I'd call them newt babies because Newt Gingrich has worked so hard to prevent any legislation that would reduce power plant emissions and things like that. You know,
I see. Yeah, you're right.
Anyhow. Yeah,
isn't he such an? I don't even want to really get into this guy.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Let's move along. What was your second point, Armin?
My stomach churning. You know.
There you go. Yeah.
But anyway,
by the way, we walked by. I just had to tell you this real quickly. When Louise and I were in New York last week doing the show from the Republican National Convention, we walked by Newt, and he was just walking down the street, and he had his tongue partway out, and he had this kind of silly look on his face, and. Without sounding like I'm down on Down syndrome children, because I know a couple of them. I know a couple and it's a terrible, terrible thing when this happens. But it was spooky he's coming going this there's a down there's somebody with Down syndrome, and it turned out it was Newt, you know, and it was anyway. You were saying second point.
That's interesting.
He's got just this incredible expression that when he's completely relaxed, he it's archetypal. But in any case,
I'm sure there's no, unlike the right wingers will tell you, there's not necessarily lines when you go minute and small enough scientifically, the lines become really difficult to see the more you look closer.
Well, I don't mean to suggest in any way that, that Down syndrome and Newt have anything to do with each other, but it was a startling observation. I mean, I didn't recognize him at first, but in any case, as you were saying, not your point, your second point.
Well, a couple of points, if I could, please. First, you had Jim Hightower on during the break, and he was talking about the Homeland Security people alarming people as shills for the insurance company and suggesting you know, implying that, oh, they better get flood insurance. And I want to tell you about how it works down here in the banana republic of Bustista. I call it Bustista because...
Yeah. They changed the rules on you guys after Hurricane Andrew, didn't they, all the insurance companies?
Oh, I got to tell you.
It's on the front page of the Wall Street Journal today.
All these super wealthy people, and I'm telling you, Tom, you can't even get out on the waterfront near me, 5 miles from me, and I'm inland with the rest of the peasants. But you can't get out there for like $400,000 now up. And some of them go, condos and stuff, go well over $1 million. So here's all these Republicans in my area. They say they're 85% Republican. This is all the personal responsibility Republicans. These people have incomes that you and me would dream about, and most of your people that listen. And, you know, they don't want us to have socialized medicine. They don't want us to have guaranteed wages or minimum wages. They don't want us to have any standards, or any floors underneath our living standard or anything, and any protectionism from unfair and unjust competition.
But they want all of us to subsidize their flood insurance.
We're subsidizing their wind insurance with Florida State, by the backing of all the taxpayers here, poor alike, wind insurance. So they get socialized wind insurance. Then they get socialized federal insurance. However you collect the taxes federally, we're paying for their federal subsidized flood insurance. And that gives them an artificially cheaper regular insurance that picks up approximately a third of it, you know, from the regular private insurance company.
But Armin, so, these people have got a lot of money to give to politicians.
And where do they get the money? Where it comes from.
Aren't
these
they
people?
Aren't they entitled, Armin, if they can buy off and bribe the politicians?
Not.
Well,
no.
See, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you, Armin. And this is these are the kind of issues that we, the people, need to be making. We need to be pointing out, hey, it is not okay to just cater to the very wealthy or the very large corporations. As a politician, you have a responsibility to be answerable to all the people, we the people. Hey, Roy in Rio Rancho has called 1-866-889-8899. Hey, Roy, what's up?
Hey, good afternoon, Tom. I got distracted earlier when you were talking about ADD week and whatever. But anyway.
Me too. It's ADD
My
day,
wife
actually.
And I went and saw What the Bleep Do You Know?
I've heard about that from several people.
It is phenomenal.
It's playing in theaters?
Yeah, and it's very limited. It's a kind of a guerrilla marketing routine, and fortunately, we had it here in Albuquerque. I have never seen graphics that illustrated the synapses and the diatribes and the spider webs in the brain.
Yeah, it's all about how you're influenced by advertising. What the bleep do you know?
Well, actually not. It's much more. Can you hold me on to a break?
Sure. Yeah, hang on there. Roy in Rio Rancho, 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
According to the latest State Department data, Iraq's crude oil revenues fell by an average of more than $24 million a day in the month of August, bringing the month's total losses to over $620 million. Almost daily attacks on pipelines and pumping stations have brought oil exports to their lowest level since October 2003. The decline couldn't have come at a worse time, with world oil prices reaching record highs.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tell me, George, if there's any damn way that there'll ever be a day I can get on a plane.
Yeah, I'd like to know that one.
Without worrying about the next maniac trying to pay me back just because you're half insane.
Jim Turr's masterpiece.
Right-wing freak judges, $200 billion grudges. Yes, war's cooked up right from day one.
Brilliant.
Big corporations are running this nation like it never was meant to be run. Yes, George, I hope you're having fun.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. That from Blue Canyon Productions, Jim Turr, who I was honored to meet last week and actually hear him sit down with a guitar and play a piece of that in live and in person. What an honor, actually. Jim, a very talented guy. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and we were in the middle of a conversation with Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, in fact. And, Roy, you wanted to make a point.
Yeah, the What the Bleep Do You Know movie.
Yeah.
It so energized me to get back and remember how we have to focus on what we want, not what we don't want. And so that's why I want to make sure that I keep focusing on sending Trump back to Crawford.
Well, isn't that a what you don't want?
To get him sent back to Crawford?
No, you don't want him to be president for another 4 years.
Well, I want him sent back to Crawford.
But I mean, you know, come on, Roy. That's that. You don't care where he goes, do you, really? I mean,
no. Well, I guess not.
If he went to Guantanamo, if he went to
Paris.
Going
after Kerry's strengths. and focusing on what we want and going toward and not away and letting the fear go. The movie actually did a phenomenal job of dramatizing how past memories just fire off at the most inopportune time.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how memory is anchored. In fact, there was I'm not remembering which book it was I read it in. Oh, it was in The Fourth Turning, which was our book of the month last month. And in The Fourth Turning, they talked about how in France, and this, apparently this is all over Europe, but the example was French. Whenever there was a major event, there were oral histories. People told oral histories. This was, you know, like long ago, right? And when they would teach their children, when they would tell their children about major events that had happened, like, you know, generations earlier, they would slap their faces. They would tell them a story, and then they slap their face. And it, you know, it's been noted in the history, in history for centuries, that this was done, and nobody understood why. And what they found is that now if you can tie a strong emotion of any kind, the emotion of fear, the emotion of love, the emotion of hate, the emotion of you know, if you name it, if you can tie a strong emotion to a bit of information, that bit of information gets remembered much longer. And that's why they slapped the faces of those kids when they taught them things that they wanted them to remember to teach their grandchildren, and they would slap their faces and tell them. And not that I'm encouraging anybody to slap anybody's face, but that's what they do with advertising and marketing very often, and certainly the Bush campaign has gotten very good at this, of essentially, you know, slapping our faces with 9/11. And over and over and over again, and then trying to embed their message of, you know, vote for George or die, basically.
That, yes, and that was so well brought out, and the focusing on the anger and frustration, where all of a sudden, because you have no control over or you think you have no control over circumstances, you feel so totally overwhelmed. When in actuality, you always have choices, even if it's the best of two bad choices.
Yeah.
There is always a choice, and if you are a cause, then you can affect the effect. But if you're the effect, you cannot dictate the cause.
Well, we definitely have a choice this year. Actually, I wrote a piece about it in Common Dreams today. Go to commondreams.org, and you can see it. And you're spot on, Roy. I appreciate it. Thank you for the call. 1-866-889-8894. Tom Hartman here with you, putting the con in conservative.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On Wednesday, one Labor Day event overshadowed all others in the media when Stephen Cassidy, president of the Uniformed Firefighters Association, Local 94, surprised organized labor by endorsing George W. Bush for re-election. The International Association of Firefighters, a separate and larger organization, was one of the first unions to endorse his challenger, John Kerry. 60,000 members of the IAFF in 19 states do not have the right to collectively bargain. Kerry is supporting a bill that would give them this right. Bush opposes it.
I hear these politicians on the Republican side of the fence running around the country giving speeches, talking about the heroes of New York, you know, who ran up those stairs to give their lives so that other people might be able to live. But they don't honor those people other than in words.
Peter Gorman, president of the Uniformed Fire Officers Association of New York City, says his members are voting for Kerry because of his co-sponsorship of the original Fire Act legislation.
From fiscal year 2004 to 2005, George W. Bush is proposing to cut $800 million nationwide on Homeland Security.
Kerry has also vowed to employ 100,000 new firefighters and is a co-sponsor of the staff staffing for adequate fire and response legislation.
Since 1990, there's been 800,000 additional citizens in the city of New York, and that's U.S. Government Census Bureau statistics. The facts don't lie. They had no right to close those firehouses. We're doing more with less every day.
Despite repeated phone calls, the UFA declined to comment.
A 10-year lawsuit over the closing of a McDonnell Douglas plant in Tulsa, Oklahoma, came to an end on Thursday. The federal judge presiding over the case approved an agreement ordering the company to pay former employees $8.1 million in back wages. After attorney fees, the more than 1,000 former workers at the military aircraft plant who filed the suit will each receive about $5,800 each. Last year, the workers agreed to settle disputes over pension and health care benefits for $36 million. The issue of back pay remained unresolved after the company appealed. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Work Zone Safety Clearinghouse, work zone-related fatalities dropped substantially last year. In 2003, there were 1,028 work zone deaths nationwide as compared to 2002, when there was 1,186. Texas holds the record for most deaths over the last 2 years with a combined total of 358. Georgia is the most improved, going from 118 fatalities in 2002 and dropping to 24 in 2003.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Right-wing freak judges, $200 billion grudges. Yes, war's cooked up right from day one. Big corporations are running this nation like it never was meant to be run.
Yeah, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. A repeat of Jim's marvelous little clip there. Why me, George? One of the questions that I think we need to ask ourselves from time to time. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The point that Roy and Rio Rancho was just making about embed a strong emotion with your advertising message brings to mind how the Iraqi goat herder in our or QUU in our chat room went through George W. Bush's speech at the Republican National Convention, his big Thursday night hoop-de-doop top of the pile here I am speech, and just edited out, took a few of his statements and kind of turned it into a little bit of this is somewhere between documentary and rap, right? It's
be afraid. September the 11th. We saw tragedy arrive on a quiet morning. The evil terrorists. September the 11th. Danger. Doom. Danger. Doom. Killers. Be afraid. Evil. The world will drift toward tragedy. Tragedy. May God bless you. Evil. God. Iraq. Afghanistan and Iraq. Evil. Darkness. God. The continuing danger of terrorism. Be afraid. September the 11th. God. God, evil. We have fought the terrorists across the earth. Evil God. Evil. We are staying on the offensive. Evil God. Be afraid. God. Striking terrorists abroad, and nothing will hold us back. And we will prevail. Evil. And nothing will hold us back. Be afraid. God bless America. Nuclear weapons. Iraq was a gathering threat, and Al-Qaeda was largely unchallenged as it planned attacks. Free Afghanistan. Terror. Pakistan. Terrorists. Saudi Arabia, Libya, weapons programs, Saddam Hussein terror.
And on it goes.
September the 11th, the Almighty God, evil God.
It's remarkable.
Hussein,
so thank you to the Iraqi goat herder for this little clip here from George W. 25 minutes, 24 minutes before the hour. Oh, there's still some more of it. On it goes. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And let's see here. Chris in New Mexico looks like he's the next on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Oh, my eyes are crossing. That was kind of weird. That was almost psychedelic.
Well, it's continuing.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Saddam Hussein's secret police.
Here's a little bit more for you.
Punishment. Mass graves. The evil terrorists. Radical ideology
of incredible?
Hate. Kill the innocent. And they should be afraid.
Really
be afraid. Tyranny and terror.
It's just
terror.
Another 10 seconds
the enemy.
Here.
Terror. The enemy. God. The resurrection. Tyranny. God. The resurrection. God. The resurrection. God. The resurrection.
And on, and that's the wrap up there. It's a remarkable piece of...
Yes, a remarkable piece of editing there.
Yeah.
I have a niece with Downs, and I don't think that... She's a great person. I don't think that you dishonor her by suggesting that maybe Newt Gingrich has adult onset Downs syndrome.
Well,
different thing altogether.
Thank you for putting a nice spin on my words.
You know, I speak to a great, great many people every day, usually over the telephone lines, and a preponderance of them think, at least the ones on the right, they seem to be terrified of the upcoming debates, which is why the Bush administration is pushing so hard to try to limit them already. Most of the Republicans, or conservatives anyway, that I know, think the debates are going to be a train wreck for poor Georgie, because it's the one place where he can be forced to confront the actual facts,
yeah,
as opposed to standing in front of hand-select cheering crowds and spouting, you know, doggerel. He will be confronted with the facts, and how can he deal with them?
Well, this is where structure meets content, and they're aggressively working on structure. Let's keep the answers to no more than a minute. Let's not allow follow-up questions. No more than 2 minutes maximum for answers. Let's limit the number. The more that they can do to control the structure in such a way that lends itself well to soundbite answers, does not require or even allow follow-up questions or answers, so it's not really a true debate. What it is dueling soundbites. The more it will work to the benefit, actually, of George W. Bush and to the detriment of John Kerry, because John Kerry has a hard time saying anything in six words. And seriously, I mean, this is a liability of John Kerry's, is that he's both thoughtful and loquacious. You know, he talks. Here I am,
yeah,
a talk show host. I should complain about this, right? But he talks too much.
Well, yeah, and on the other hand, George W. Bush is incapable of saying anything with more than three syllables. So, I don't know, maybe it'll even out. All I know is that most of the Republicans are just shaking in their boots about this, because it is something that will not play well for them. It didn't last time, even though Gore was hammered by the press. But in the last incarnation of the debates, when it was Bush-Gore, George Bush hadn't been president for 4 years. He didn't have to really face anything except, you know, polluting the hell out of Texas. Now he has everything. I mean, 999 soldiers. That's what we've hit today, which is going to make the news because that's a dramatic number. But
And the reality, Chris, too, is if you go back and you look at the debate between Gore and Bush, in which the press, I think, by and large, declared Bush the winner. I watched it and I couldn't. You know, I thought it was just shocking how poorly Bush did. But nonetheless, most of the points that George Bush made that were perceived as his winning an argument type of points were his saying things like he was opposed to budget deficits. He wanted to make sure that Social Security would never be changed. He was saying things that not only did he not do, not only did he do the opposite of, but at the time, if you looked back at his record in Texas and if you looked at his philosophical positions and his worldview and those of his advisors, were clearly misstatements of the truth, shall we say. And those were the points upon which he so-called won the debate with Gore, or at least took it to a draw, by lying over and over and over about what he would do. And, we've done programs, and people who listen regularly to this show, I've done an entire program where I've taken the Bush-Gore debate and taken the points that Bush said what he said he was going to do as president, and pointed out, all over and over and over and over again, he was portraying himself as a moderate, when in fact he's a radical extremist conservative.
Yeah.
And as you say, he won't be able to get away with that again, maybe.
Maybe.
See, this is the amazing thing that Jon Stewart did so brilliantly on The Daily Show a couple nights ago, where he took Bush's, I believe it was his convention speech, and he pointed out that in that speech, you know, half a dozen times, Bush talked about what we're going to do in the next 4 years, never discussing what he had done in the past four, as if he wasn't running for re-election, but was running for election.
Which is more true than we know.
Well, yeah, there's that on a whole nother level of reality. Yes, absolutely. But nonetheless, you know, I think, you know, the Kerry folks, when they say this guy's got a record not to run on but to run from, are absolutely right. And so he's going to have to figure out. But see, I think also the other spin that you might be falling victim to, Chris, is the Republicans are the masters of the art of defining expectation. And that was, I think, in one regard, how. Why it was that the press thought that Bush held his own with Gore, or maybe
low
even
bar.
Won. Exactly, because everybody expected him to be blah, 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 blah. And the reality is that George W. Bush is not inarticulate. He is inarticulate under certain circumstances, when it requires abstract thinking, when it requires, you know, stringing together a whole bunch of different things, when it requires going into and discussing about things that are not part of his nature, compassion, the quote, liberal issues, you know, whatever. But when you get him talking about vengeance, about anger, about killing other people, about war, about punishment, he is extraordinarily articulate. He is frighteningly articulate. And as Mark Crispin Miller points out in the Bush Dyslexicon, and he dissects the whole thing, and he suggests that what you've got is a kid who was the victim of a very, very severe and punishing mother who, and I realize it's not politically correct to pick on Barbara Bush, but that's why the jokes were made about her by her granddaughters, who really, basically, his core emotion is rage. And whenever he gets close to that, he becomes just startlingly articulate. But you try to get him into the emotion of love or compassion, and that's when he gets all tongue-tied.
Yep.
And so don't underestimate how articulate George Bush can be. And if he can construct the debates in a way that he can answer questions with one-liners that that have to do with, you know, vengeance and manliness and power and rage and its variations. He may do very well. He may do very well. I'm not one of those who is sitting around thinking, oh, I can hardly wait for the debates because Kerry's going to make mincemeat out of Bush. Because if Kerry starts getting into nuanced discussions and talking about what's really going on, and Bush throws out sound bites, Bush may well just, you know, win. I mean, he might.
Well, I think we disagree. All I know is that most of the Republicans, conservatives that I know, are not looking forward to this, or are looking forward to it with a great deal of trepidation.
Yeah. Well, I suspect, and I may be wrong, but I suspect that their concerns are misplaced. But time will tell.
Take care.
We have, yeah, thanks a lot for the call, Chris. Good to hear from you. We have an interesting 56 days to go here before regime change or the possibility thereof. And what might, other factors, other things that might happen between now and then. The oil shock, everybody's talking about the oil shock. You know, there's the oil prices, 34, they went from the 20s to the 30s to the 40s up to nearly $50 a barrel. There are very credible people within the oil industry who are suggesting that within this decade, certainly, we will see $150 a barrel oil. Perhaps within the next 3 years, we'll see $100 a barrel oil, and probably within the next year, we'll see $50 a barrel as the new basis for oil prices, not as the new high point, but as the new baseline point, with the prices fluctuating up and down $10 around that. And, you know, what's that going to do to the world economy and all that sort of thing? Well, and will the, in the context of that, as the dollar is deflated by the, all the debt that the Bush administration has been running up, to what extent will the OPEC members, particularly the Arab nations, be willing to continue denominating oil in dollars? Which is a whole another issue. There's this big concern that Saddam Hussein was talking about pricing his oil in euros. Well, the euro has gone up 20% against the dollar since George Bush became president. And really what that means is the value of the euro has essentially remained the same, but the value of the dollar has dropped. And when the value of the dollar drops and all things start balancing out, then the result of that is something called inflation. And we're seeing that right now in the United States. We're seeing the price of things going up, and, you know, that's called inflation, or the value of the dollar going down. And the outcome of that, and some of this, of course, is being driven by oil, but most of it, frankly, is being driven, you know, the price of it is being driven by the economic policies of this administration, running the nation into debt so that there is greater and greater competition out there in the marketplace for borrowed money. And the upshot of that will be that interest rates are going to start going up. I mean, there's just no way to avoid it. Alan Greenspan has been artificially holding interest rates low in an attempt to, Greenspan is an old line partisan, not just a partisan Republican, but he's an objectivist. He was initiated into Ayn Rand's cult in her apartment in New York City back in the 1950s. And he truly believes this religion of the so-called free market, and that, you know, that government really is not useful, that we don't need all this, you know, socialized schools and socialized police force, socialized fire, all this. And instead, you know, corporations run everything. It's his worldview. And so he has been artificially holding down interest rates, even in the face of massive evidence that there is inflation happening. Oil prices only being part of it. We've seen in the last 3 years almost a 40% increase in the price of health care in the United States. The price of food is going up. The price of fuel, I mean, it's just right across the board. In every significant area, you're seeing true inflation here in the United States. So interest rates are going to go up, and they are going to go up steeply after the election. Bank on it. And when that happens, you've got this enormous number of people in the United States who have used their homes, the equity in their homes, as living, as walking around money, as spending money. I think it's so tragic, that commercial for one of the remortgage companies, and I forget which one it is, where the kid comes home and says, "Look, Dad, I got accepted to college," and the father goes, "Oh, isn't that Ivy League?" And then, you know, he's got this, you know, false grin on his face as he's selling the family's silver and his jewelry and watches and things, and he's putting his car for sale, and then he brings in Plavitz. Here's Plavitz. He's going to be our renter, you know, and Strasvigia, Plavitz says, you know, and then his wife says, "Oh, don't worry, honey. We're going to remortgage the house. We're going to refinance the house." See, what's happened is, because interest rates have been low, the value of houses, people figure out how much house they can buy, not based on how much a house costs, but on how much their monthly payments are going to be. And their monthly payments are a function of how much interest is in there. In fact, we've seen the amount of interest. The last year of the Clinton administration, we paid $360 billion in interest on the money that Reagan borrowed. And the first 2 years of the Bush administration, we paid $50 billion less in interest because Greenspan had cranked interest rates down. So even the federal debt load, the interest on the debt, goes down during those times. So, you know, families are doing this. Well, when the price of interest goes up, the value of houses goes down because the monthly payments are going up. And when that happens, this is going to be a real shock. And a great piece in the New York Times by Daniel Gross called "The Next Shock, Not Oil, But Debt." And he talks about how total debt has more than doubled since 1994. Get that? Doubled total debt in the United States. That's you and me. The government has gone in, you know, from $1 trillion with Reagan to $7 trillion here now with George W., and it's a bomb waiting to explode. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, "Whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it." And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question,
whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When human rights groups discover that our third world sweatshops employ a lot of child labor, they're always horrified. These children should be in school, they stridently insist. But why would these kids be better off sitting at a desk learning about social studies than working on our assembly lines? Schools are supposed to prepare you for the future. In most of the places we do business, the only future these moppets have is on an assembly line. What better way for them to prepare than in our sweatshop apprentice program? The kids get paid a special introductory wage while they learn all the skills they'll need for the rest of their short, miserable lives. And those little hands can do some really intricate stitching, believe me. This has been Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Pick up the billionaire!
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation, free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
The shipping industry takes a closer look at its own exhaust. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A huge portion of international trade is carried across the oceans by more than 35,000 ships. These ships burn a lot of fuel and release a lot of exhaust. The International Maritime Organization is trying to cut down on that exhaust to lessen the impact of shipping on air pollution and greenhouse gas emissions. Jim Corbett is a marine policy expert at the University of Delaware. He says exhaust from ships accounts for a small fraction of the world's greenhouse gas pollution, especially from carbon dioxide. But as global trade increases, so will the number of ships at sea. Corbett says the shipping industry is trying to cut emissions now instead of dealing with more serious pollution in the future. Corbett says the International Maritime Organization is looking for ways to cut exhaust by improving efficiency. For example, better designs for the propeller can maximize its efficiency at propulsion, and better designs for the hull can lower the friction of a moving ship against the water. Those kinds of changes can improve fuel efficiency, and that cuts down the amount of exhaust. Corbett says these changes take years to put into effect. He says they're most cost-effective when they're built into new ships rather than retrofitted into old ones.
These hull and propeller changes, making the vessels smoother and making the power transfer better, have been shown to have the most potential within a context of a fleet modernization, of implementing newer designs into the fleet. They're a little bit less effective for existing engines.
Corbett says the efforts to reduce carbon dioxide pollution are part of a much larger effort to reduce all kinds of air pollution from ocean-going vessels. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads at Tiananmen Square.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's coming from 35% of new mortgages in the second quarter this year, up from 27% in the fourth quarter last year. are adjustable rate mortgages. More and more people are going with adjustable rate mortgages because they're cheaper at this moment. Beware. Beware. If you have a mortgage on your home, get it nailed down to a fixed rate now, because interest rates are going to explode. Trust, I have lived through this before. I have seen this before. This is what's coming, and it's going to be a major problem for us and for the world. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
You know, it's fascinating. I was listening to your commentary about Bush and how he gets articulate when he gets angry.
Yeah.
And, my God, that was spot on. I never noticed it.
It's true.
But it was interesting because I remember people that I knew who had joined the military trying to, you know, and they would try and work out their anger and what have you. And I guess I'm a little stunned by the fact that old Georgie basically shirked, to some extent, his military service when it's so obvious that he, in certain ways, is trying to work out this anger against his parents.
And well, I think he didn't want to get killed. And in fact, in a way, his shirking his military service was another way of working out his anger with his parents, because his dad was a war hero. His father volunteered to be a pilot in World War II.
Yeah, he was like shot down twice in the Pacific, I think.
Yeah, or at least once that I know. You know, I'm not sure all the details, but yeah, he was shot down, and you know, there's been some stories about that. But in any case, it's yeah, he so by being the ne'er-do-well, by being the drunk, by being the guy who didn't show up for service. He was throwing it in his parents' face. Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, and, no, but I really appreciate you pointing that out, because I missed it totally, but you're absolutely spot on. He is only inarticulate when he is attempting to deal with, you know, more rational, focused issues, and I think the Kerry campaign is going to have to take advantage of that, or we're going to have a problem.
Yeah, and that's going to be the problem, is that depending on how the debates are structured, Bush will either have an opportunity to just throw out sound bites, and in which case he may come through them just fine. Or, you know, if there's a real debate, then we're going to get to see real issues. We will see. Chuck, thanks for the call. Yep, good to hear from you. 1-866. Well, you know our number. And it's the end of the day. So thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Ira for engineering it, to Brad for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet. To Mike Toth and to Ben Burge for our archives at whiterosesociety.org and tomhartman.com. To the folks in our chat room for showing up. To Jay for writing and producing our theme music. And thanks to you for listening. See you tomorrow. Same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warming, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet. The